6:30. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have one resident here from Derby Lane that I know of.
But Rick is on it?
Not that I know of.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Kopisch?
Here.
Trustee Genridge?
Here.
Trustee Green?
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart?
Here.
Trustee Gast?
Here.
Trustee Zeller?
Here.
I'd like to make a couple of modifications to the agenda. I assume there are some people here for the Derby Lane issue and for the liquor license issue. So I'd like to move those issues up to 4B, and then so that our fire chief can be on her merry way, I'd like to move item 16 up to 6B. Is there anyone else here who would like to see an item moved up or down the agenda? Yes.
If we could possibly move 13 up, maybe after 7 or so? Or maybe after Derby?
Why don't we move 13 to 6C?
Thank you.
So we'll have the chief's report, and then we'll have item 13. If I keep all that straight, it's going to be a miracle. Are there any other suggested modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as revised? Trustee Green, second. Trustee Genridge, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Announcements. Mr. Lugi?
I just have a couple. Just wanted to touch base on the TIF press conference for those of you that came. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. It was a success. We had a lot of press that came. I don't know if you saw some of the newspaper articles and TV coverage after the fact, so we got some good information out in regard to it. I've also had a few calls from developers as well as from some of the local businesses looking for interest in the facade program. So it was well done, and for the ABA, I'd like to thank the ABA for all their work on it. And also like to thank Trevor, who's on the end of the table here. He's our intern, and he did a lot of work on it and did a great job getting the word out and touching base with the press and making sure everything got out. So I want to thank him for all his hard work on the project as well.
Before you move on, I know some of you were there from the board, but this was it almost couldn't have been better, this release. We had quite a few people there. The entire staff did a great job. Brad was there working on things, and of course Tracy was working on things, and our new logo was there, and it was really a great event and a great way to kick off and announce the TID.
I'd also like to introduce our new finance director. Clara Pickett is right next to Trevor on the end, so this is her first meeting, and she's been here a week and a day now, so we welcome Clara, and hope you will enjoy many years with us, so thank you. And let's see, one more. The logo Steve had mentioned, we are in the process of getting letterhead together. We put it on our emails. If anybody would like to add it to their village email, please let us know, and we'll get that out to you as well to add it on to the bottom of your email. So we're in the process of incorporating the new logo into everything that we do have as well.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Moving on, we'll move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Is it backwards?
Yes.
There. You're backwards, Joe. You're gonna.
I should talk to them. Two things. One is my neighbor said something about you're cutting a pipe from Bitters Court down to Libo. Is that a fact? Is there a line being drawn? Sewer line of some sort?
Craig?
What is that? What is your question?
My neighbor said that you're going to be running a line from Bitters Court down to Lytle. Is that a sewer, water, or is it sanitary?
Bitters Court down to Lytle. I'd have to check on that because I'm not aware of that.
Well, it's running right through her property. She got a letter from the office saying she's going to be liable for the portion that it's...
Relining a sewer? Yeah, right. There's one line in there we're going to reline, slip line. There's no open cut in there. It's just a slip line.
To her house or...?
Right through the existing pipe. It's already there.
It's not coming from Bitters Court down to Lytle?
I'd have to look at it to make sure that's where it ends up. There is a sewer line that does go, it goes south out of the corner of Lytle, but it's going to be relined, slip line.
Well, if I remember correctly, either the storm or the sanitary sewer that runs north and south on Lytle, one of them dead ends at Hoffman. I don't remember. I remember when all the water backed up, it couldn't cut through. I thought maybe if you're going to be opening that section up when you do the roundabout, you might be able to connect it so it goes straight through.
Yeah, that would be a different project then, yeah.
Well, it would be something to look at.
We did Huffman Road work. Yeah, that's when that type of work would be done.
How do we get it done?
It would have to be done as part of Huffman Road.
How do we initiate that?
Well, there really isn't anything you need to do at this point. Huffman Road is a project that's scheduled for 2014.
Okay. The other thing is number five. In that ordinance about the 700 block down on Broadview, there's two trucks that have been sitting there for 4 or 5 years. Is that covered in the ordinance?
Two trucks?
Yeah.
Down at Port East River?
Those two vans.
The vans? Those two vans have been there for 4 or 5 years. And isn't there an ordinance now that you can't do that?
That wouldn't be under this ordinance. I think that would be under the vehicle ordinance. That has to, the vehicles,
there's vehicles
have to be working,
on this?
Working condition. Now, this is about trailers.
Oh, I thought there were vehicles in it, too. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Murphy? Can you give us your name and address for the record?
Joe Murphy, 3224 Lytle.
Thank you.
Alloway, Wisconsin.
If you're here for Derby Lane, I think what we'll do is we'll open that up at the time we get to that item. Is there anyone else you'd like to speak?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I'll say good evening, Mr. President and members of the board. Some of us are here tonight to address the issue of returning the right to park on Derby Lane. I'll just give you a little historical rundown on our request. In 2007, we came before the board and asked them to return parking to Derby Lane. They said that because of federal funding, they couldn't consider it for 5 years, and furthermore, it was to be considered a temporary feeder street due to extensive construction of 172 Monroe Avenue. It's been well past 5 years, and Highway 172 and Monroe have been done for years, and no significant traffic ever appeared. But the problem still continues, and the people in Derby and others are not happy about it. Some of the complaints I heard, several Thursdays ago, I walked up and down the street to see how many people were still in favor of having parking allowed on Derby, and probably 100% were for it. I didn't get to everybody. But anyway, some of the complaints I heard from the side street owners is that Derby residents are causing congestion on their streets by using their guest spots, especially during Packer games, holidays, Packer games, etc. Convenience was a big issue with no parking. There's narrow post-World War II driveways make it difficult for guests, relatives, and friends to park. Speeding, reckless driving is another issue. I know that on several different occasions that Westminster vehicles, you know, kicking it down when rounding their turn from Monroe, and then they go really hightailing it up Derby, parking on residential streets is as American and Wisconsin as baseball, hot dog, apple pie, cheddar cheese.
We now ask the board to change
it back to the parking. And my name is Dan Lays. I live at 2607 Oakwood Avenue in Green Bay, Wisconsin, 5401.
Thank you. If we could hold on, if you're here for the Derby Lane issue, I think what we'll do is we'll open it up when we get to that item on the agenda, so we can have sort of a conversation back and forth instead of having you give your comments now and then having to wait through four or five agenda items until we get to Derby Lane. So if you have a comment about Derby Lane, we'll get to you. If you just want to hold off until we get to that, it looks like just after public appearances, and we're going to take item 10 and then we'll take this item. So, is there anyone else who'd like to speak on any item on the agenda or off the agenda? We only can take action on items that are listed under a business section of the agenda this evening. Just want to talk about Derby. Okay, that's fine. All right, let's go to item 10. I don't think this will be long. Action regarding the approval of licenses to sell fermented malt beverages and intoxicating liquors from July of 2013 to the end of June of 2014. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gendrich?
So moved.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
Second.
Discussion? Any?
I just wanted to note that the Village Grill did add a dining area to their application. Turtleside Convenience Mart, known as Alloway Quick Stop, has requested a Class A liquor to their application. Mm-hmm. And Alloway Yacht Harbor will no longer be selling alcohol. Within the last year, the ordinance changed where we had to, these sites are now inspected by our DEO officer, fire station, and building inspector, and all those came back passed.
As passing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Trustee Zeller?
For the clerk, regarding that Class A addition to the Trailside Convenience Mart,
yes.
Is there a precedent for that with any other convenience stores within the village? There is. Okay.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Item 8, Derby. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to Derby Lane? Yes, ma'am.
I would. My name is Valerie Hutchison. I own the home at 812 Derby Lane. This gentleman came to my door, and I just want to say that the 100% figure may be a little bit misleading. You'll find my name on that petition, and it was because I didn't think you'd give weight to someone doing a petition that didn't live on Derby Lane. And B, he was not leaving until I signed the petition. Mm. So I believe that Derby Lane is entirely too narrow to have parking on it. He said his friend has a lot of parties and needs the parking. But more importantly, there's a lot of us that walk our dogs, that run on Derby, that live on Derby, are homeowners and taxpayers on Derby, that if we had parking, we would be doing that in the middle of the street. And I think it's a safety issue. It certainly is a property value issue. The look of it is poor when you have a street that narrow. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Are you Valerie?
Yeah.
Sir, do you live on Oakwood and Alloway, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Not on Derby Lane?
No, I used to live on Derby Lane.
You used
I used to live at 930 Derby Lane. See, when they rebuilt the road back in 2004, they took the parking away. And in 2007, they were in front of the board and asked them to allow it, and they said, no, it won't be, not for another 5 years until 172, and Monroe is done. And I don't know why we waited so long, but we're doing it now.
Anyone else would like to speak with regard to the Derby Lane issue? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Amy Martinez. I live at 833 Derby Lane. And I would like to see the parking come back. You know, we have a one-stall driveway. Anyone comes over, there's no room for anyone to park. And so we're on the side street then. I also, like it was mentioned, cars do go way over the 25 miles an hour speed limit that is posted on there. And it's a very young neighborhood now. There's a lot of young children. I think that the parking would help slow those cars down a little bit to be more aware of things going on in the street as opposed to. And I would like to be able to, depending on what side of the street it is, maybe park my car at the end of my driveway so my kids can't, you know, balls aren't rolling into the street or kids on bikes aren't right into the street just because it's so, you know, cars are so fast. It's used as a through street so frequently. I was talking with, we live in a duplex, the gentleman on the other side, and he was mentioning how he uses Hastings as a through street and there's parking on both sides and goes much slower on Hastings because you don't know what's going to happen, you know. And I just think with that factor that it would help slow that down. I mean, it's already 25. You can't drop it any lower than that. So I mean, there's nothing really that we can do to prevent the cars from going through, but if we can slow them down or make them more aware of what's going on, I think for kids' safety, it's the neighborhood is transitioning from older retirees now to younger families. And I look down the street and it's all young kids now, you know, so just for a safety issue. Okay.
Thank you. Yes, sir, please.
Okay. Hi, my name is Steve Toyn. I live on 920 Derby Lane. You know, I agree with what Amy was saying about slowing traffic down with having the cars parked on the road. People be more aware of what's going on and not just fly through the area, you know, as a through street. I also agree with her. It's kind of narrow, but I believe in the past we had parking on the north side of the street. So I think, you know, to kind of reestablish that parking on at least one side of the street would be very, you know, beneficial. You know, not only from a convenience point of view, but also for safety. So that's it.
Thank you. Anyone else who hasn't spoken? Yes, sir.
My name is Mark Kobelak, 711 Derby Lane. I totally disagree with this lady here that it's going to decrease our property values. It's actually an increase in property values. Me and my family lived here when we did have parking. And then, you know, the first thing I thought of, you take that away, I mean, who wants to move in our neighborhood with young families? You have no place to park, to have birthday parties, Christmas, Easter. It's a residential neighborhood. It's not an artery for, you know, a heavy traffic flow that's happening in the last 9 years since 2004 after construction was completed, that people just they zip through from Monroe Riverside Drive up to Webster. And we're sick of that. I mean, there's a lot of us here that lived there when we did have parking, and it makes people more conscious about slowing down. It is a neighborhood, you know, it's a residential neighborhood. And we want our parking back for a quality of life and, you know, just a residential neighborhood. I guess that's what I'll have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, please.
I'm Kim Schwartz. Schwartz, and I live at 912 Derby Lane. And I echo basically everything because we have a family. My daughter just turned 16, so I have to have three cars in the driveway, and there's no place for anyone to bark. In addition, I have a graduation, and every time we do have a party at our house, we have to call the St. Vincent lot to be able to park up there because we can't park on the street. So my dad does not like walking far. So I would really appreciate it if we could get parking at least on one side.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ann Lays. I live at 434 Mission Road in the village of Alloway, and I also want to express my concern as far as parking on Derby Lane. I do attend happenings at friends' places. I also use the street quite a bit as I pass through from downtown to Alloway, and I have no problem with parking on Derby Lane. I would appreciate it if it would come back. And I believe that it is more of a residential type area as well. And as such, any street really in Alloway is, and there's parking on all Alloway streets, very few that are restricted that I can think of. One of them is probably a couple blocks over on Catherine Street, and that's a one-way street, and there's no parking on that. That's really off the top of my head, the only one I can think of. So I'd appreciate it if you could bring parking back there.
Thank you.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah. I want to get to people who haven't spoken yet, then we'll...
Hi.
Yes.
My name is Amanda. I live on 711 Derby Lane. And I would just like to say it would be great to bring it back. Number one, for the safety. I really think it would slow down cars. Number two, it's just frustrating having to explain to people, like, oh, you can't park on the street. I have so many people that pop in and just say hi. And I'm worried about them, like getting a ticket on the street or their car getting hit because there's no parking, you know. Also, in the winter, I hate to bring up winter because it's spring and it's so nice out, but because our driveways are so narrow, like, if we have to move out our cars, if we park our cars out in the winter, we have to shovel, so therefore, then we have to park our car in the street, but you can't when there's, like, 15 feet of snow, so then you have to try to bring it up to Jackson, and that's a whole mess, and so... I just really like to see parking back, just for those reasons. So, thank you.
Could you I'll give your last name, please?
Obravic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, ma'am, please.
Okay. Just one final comment. I'm new here. I moved here from Ohio, and I guess I won't be invited to coffee anywhere. I'm sorry about
walking
that.
Distance.
But it's a disagreement. It's, you know, yeah, it's just, you know, my opinion. And absolutely, people fly down Derby Lane, and that is an issue, but it's a separate issue. That's a policing issue, and that needs to be handled by the police force. It needs to be, we need that looked at, and police monitoring that, and after tickets are given out for that, flying up Riverside Drive, you know, enough of them, it'll stop. But that is not a reason to get parking up. People have given other reasons, but that's my opinion.
Okay, thank you. I think what we'll do is we'll take up the rules and discuss it amongst the board of it, and then we'll probably open it up at the end and see if anyone has any final comments from our visitors this evening. So we'll take up the rules. Craig, I think what we probably need is an update on the Riverside Drive project, and I don't know the history of this all that well. I wasn't here in 2004 when they redid the street, but we're still going to be doing some work along Riverside. The 172 project is sort of a separate project, the overpass. We've got the Riverside Drive project coming up. Is that sort of what you think was the reasoning given in 2004 as to why we needed to wait? Or was it really the 172 project?
I went back and actually had the consultant that did the design work to look up some of the notes that they from back at that time. And that road is classified as a collector street. which is a federal designation for that street. And because of that, it has some specific requirements as far as how you design that road. Now, as it relates to what was done back at that time, if it was going to have parking on that street, it would have had to have been at least a 40-foot wide road. The board made a decision at that time to stay with the 30-foot street. And under the design standards for a collective street, parking is not allowed for that width of street. And in fact, for our design standards, for what we look at in a normal street, we wouldn't put parking on a 30-foot wide street either, because you only have maybe 5 or 6 feet available for a parking lane, and that's not enough. So the decision back in 2003 was to keep the road at its current width and basically not provide parking, and it was because of the design standards as a collector road.
Craig, what does that mean to be a collector? I don't understand what collector means. What is that?
Well, we have several streets. You know, we have, most of our streets are residential streets, but we have a number of streets that are either collectors or arterials. Huffman Road is an arterial, which means it's a main traffic road.
Right. I get that.
Green Avenue is a collector. Derby is a collector. It's a collector because it takes traffic from Webster to Riverside. So there are selected streets.
So it's like a small artery then, right?
That's
arterial,
what it is.
I get.
That's what it is.
Okay.
And because of that, because it's a collector street, that was eligible for the federal funding,
okay,
which is what brought into play the DOT design standards. Now, today, if we design that street, we'd have to have not only the street width, but we'd have to have the bike lanes and the sidewalk at the same time, because back at this time, it was optional. You had to consider bike lanes and you had to consider sidewalk. Today, it's pretty much mandatory that you include those. So you wouldn't have been able to build the street today at this narrow width. It would have had to be a little larger street. But at that time, it was optional, and the decision was to keep the street at that width, with, I think, part of the goal was to keep the traffic speeds down. And if you recall, we've talked about that in the past. When you have a narrower street, it does tend to slow down the traffic somewhat, and we've even talked about intentionally narrowing some streets just for that reason. Anyway, that's the past history as to how it got to be the 30-foot street. And at that time that that decision was made, they eliminated the sidewalk, which was under consideration on the north side of that street. So there was a proposed sidewalk, and then it was deleted in the final decision before they went ahead with the project. Now, how does this relate to Riverside Drive? Well, I would assume that it means that it will stay a collector street because it will be a route between two major thoroughfares in the village, Webster and Riverside Drive. I don't see that changing, although I suppose it's possible. I would think that one of the things that will come up is providing a sidewalk on that road in the future to tie into sidewalks on Riverside Drive. We'll see, but that could be a consideration in the future when Riverside Drive design is developed.
So how does the street become a residential street instead of a collector street? Or is it your collector street for life? Or it strikes me that times change and you might want to change the designation of a street.
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I know the answer as to whether you can change it back to a residential street. Because it is a designation that's put on the street by the state DOT and federal in conjunction with our MPO, our Metro Highway Authority here, basically.
And do you have to have a certain number of collector streets within a geographic area and a certain number of arterial streets in the
generally area? Determined by traffic counts. It means a higher traffic count, and it falls into that category where they classify it as a collector.
So a study was done, and they found a lot of people were using Derby, and so that's how it got the designation.
Yeah.
And then we got the federal funds to redo the road with that classification that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Right, exactly. And the decision back at that time was, do we leave the street at the 30-foot width, or do we make it 40 feet plus and have parking? and the decision was at that time to keep it at 30 feet.
I'm just wondering if we explore trying to get a residential designation for this street, will that mean we're just going to have to designate some other street in that area as being a collector street because you have to have a certain number of them per
There has
number.
To be through routes, yeah. But the other thing is at 30 feet, I don't think we can get a parking stall on that street at that width. And normally in the village, we have no parking on those streets that are that width because they're that narrow.
What other streets do we have that are 30?
We have a lot of them that are 30 feet that are no parking.
Can't park on any of them.
Yeah, we have quite a few. So there's no easy answer for you, but that's the background of how it got to be what it is.
So Riverside really has nothing to do with it at all?
No, not really, other than it may, well, it may result in a sidewalk or something like that. It could be, but it's not a large impact on Derby, no. See, in the two intersections at Webster and Riverside, they were widened because it is a relatively wide right-of-way, but the road's narrow. So they did widen the road for turning lanes at those intersections. And, of course, that'll change with Riverside. At the Riverside intersection, that will become a wider intersection, I'm sure. There'll still be turning lanes, but it'll become wider.
Okay. I have a couple of questions for our visitors. We're going to have to wait to get to you until we're finished talking amongst the board, if you could. Yes, Trustee Gatt.
Craig, since that's a designated collector street, if we opted to put parking on there, would that destroy the collector street designation and then we'd have a problem with DOT? Or don't you know yet?
We would have to check, but I believe that with the current design standards, you can't put parking on it as a collector. You'd have to change the street designation in order to do something.
Yeah, I mean, my inclination ultimately, and we're going to have a discussion tonight, is to refer it to Public Works because I think it needs more study than we can do, you know, at a board meeting.
Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that our visitors get some answers to why it hasn't happened so far and where we're going to go from here. Anything further amongst the board before we open it up? And yes,
just a question, Craig. If 40 feet allows parking on both sides, is it possible to, as someone suggested, do parking on one and shift the center line over? So you've got...
You probably have to widen the road to 33 feet. Maybe 34 to get a parking lane on it.
At 30 foot,
the way it is right now, you only have between 27 and 28 feet of asphalt. So even with the narrowest lane, which would be two 11-foot lanes, which we don't like to do on a street like this, we like to have 12-foot lanes, but at two 11s, that gives you 6 foot for parking, and that's not enough. And you can't drive in the gutter pan of the curb, so you got to be away from that. So that's why you don't really have enough width at 30 feet.
Okay, thanks.
It's a problem to put parking on one side with the street width as it is, I think.
Trustee Kopisch?
Yeah, I agree with Trustee Gass' recommendation to go to Public Works. Has there been any review by traffic and safety? Is that anticipated?
I was hoping that that DEO Rick would be here tonight to see if he either had some suggestions tonight or public safety's looked at it. I don't think they have. Tracy, do you know?
Rick was planning to be here tonight, so I know something came up that he wasn't able to get in, but I know he's off at 7, so maybe get something come up before him.
Okay. Trustee Dart.
Is there, and this may just make it not feasible, but is there any way it could be made into a one-way street and then there would be enough room for parking?
No, I don't think we could do that.
Because we'd still have to have a throwaway
right.
going the other direction.
Yeah, I don't think we could do that.
Okay, then the other thought I had is, to me, and I can't second guess who was here before us, but if you're not having parking, it seems odd they didn't put sidewalks on there because you have to park somewhere else, walk in the road to get to those houses, and there's no sidewalk to do that.
Well, sidewalks have never been very popular, so there was in the notes here,
shovel
the public hearing, there's quite a few comments from residents on Derby that did not want bicycle routes or pedestrian walkways, so that's why it was deleted.
Craig, why couldn't we explore changing some of those streets to one way, one east and one west, and you've got your connectors, you know, one way going east and one way going west, and those are your collectors or connectors or whatever they're called. I mean, do we have control over the streets that much, or who do we have to...
But in this case, this is the only street that goes through that area that, that connects those two, so... You know, to do it one way, you've got to have streets close together where you can
do loop
around. And we don't have the same design standards on multiple streets where we can do that.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to open it up again, unless Trustee Green.
I was just wondering about Chief Watzka, any concern regarding fire engines? Because I know that's been a concern on some of our smaller streets.
Thank you. It is something that I absolutely would appreciate the opportunity to look at. I have not yet, and I certainly would like to compare it to what your ordinance is reading, things like that. So if you give an opportunity, I'll have to bring that back.
Thank you.
Okay, unless there are objections, I'm going to open it up again. Yes, sir.
Mark Kovalak again, 7-Level Derby. I was here. I went through all the board meetings back in 04, into 03, 04, and we're going through these. What happened was they redesignated from residential to a collector street to get federal funding. It was all about money. And we were told by the board after 5 years, so they would not get in trouble with the federal government getting this funded because federal money paid 80% and LOA paid 20%. They said after 5 years, they won't have any ramifications from changing it back from the federal funding, that they could turn it back into a residential road. And that never happened. We tried it again years later, and it wasn't 5 years yet. And then now, you know, kind of, there's been a lot of people moving in and out. There's still a lot of us here that were here back in 03, 04 when this was happening. It's purely financial and back then. And as far as the sidewalks, what happened was, they came and said, okay, we're redoing all your sewer and water on Derby. And anybody that didn't have the new new PVC pipe had to spend the money on it, you know, to reconnect from the old clay pipe from the house to the new system. Yeah. And everybody was freaking out because it was an astronomical amount of money. And then they said, you're going to get sidewalks too, and that's going to cost you that much extra. And it really freaked everybody out. But that was their little trick up their sleeve. After much talking, they made a compromise, say, well, okay, we're going to take your parking away after we're fighting the parking even back then. We'd rather have, you know, a wider street. But and then all of a sudden they said, well, we won't give you sidewalks, and you save that money, you still have to pay for all your new sewer system. And everybody says, oh, everybody's so relieved to save that money. Then they said, okay, we don't care about parking anymore. That's what happened. We got kind of snaggled there. That, you know, it was kind of slid in there. It was not. So then we all bid our time 5 years. We were hoping to, you know, come back and then get our parking back again, get our residential neighborhood back again. And all these things he's saying about parking, there's been parking on the streets of Dawn of Time up until 04, just like any other residential neighborhood. The designation of a collector road was done just for the federal funding. It was no brand design. It was just for the federal funding to get the 80% funding for it.
It's your recollection that the five years that we're talking about was the Fed rule as to how long it had to remain a collector road until
we were told by the board. We were told by our liaison guy that was handling construction and negotiations for us. You know, because we had multiple meetings leading up to it, and you know, it just baffled me that you know we got people just settled, you know, because then we lost the parking in the negotiations. So that's exactly what happened. So
thank you. If this does go to Public Works, that would be one thing that the Public Works Committee would want to consider is if there's a federal regulation and what that regulation might be as far as the statute of limitations, if you would, or when the sunset is on this designation of being of having to be a collector road.
Anyone else who'd like to speak, given the conversation that's taken place thus far?
Item.
Could you repeat your name and address, please?
Anne Lays, 2607 Oakwood Avenue.
Thank you.
How many cars have to, in order to make it a collector street, if we could ask the gentleman, how many cars have to travel per hour on the street? Because Mark's wife and I was just up here, sat counting cars, you know, I know it's nothing official or anything. I just want to know what the number, if he knows what the number is supposed to be.
I would imagine that you don't off the top of your head, Craig. It strikes me that it makes some sense, and I don't know the federal regulations, that you'd have to have a collector street every so often in terms of geographic area, and if Derby's the only road in that area that's going east-west to connect Webster and Riverside, they've got to have one street with that designation. I don't know what they used before this, though. Before 2004, did we just not have a collector street in that area? So I'd like the Public Works Committee, if this goes to Public Works, to sort of explore what those rules are. How many collector streets do we have to have? How close to each other do they have to be? In order to see if it's even an option to make this a residential street. If it is, then we can take the next steps of if it's sort of physically possible to do it in terms of the design, and then the practical applications of it in terms of if we've got to widen the street or some of the hardships people are going through now. I can't imagine in the middle of winter asking guests to go park around the corner and up the block and then, oh, by the way, walk through the street to get to my house. It can't be a lot of fun to do that. You almost need a chauffeur service from your house to go pick people up on a different street. Yes, Trustee Gass.
Are you ready for a motion?
I don't know if I am. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Amy Martinez from 833 Derby. I just have a question. Is the street the same width that it was before the construction when parking was allowed?
Yes. It's bigger.
Okay.
Craig, do you know
that? I don't really know other than what's in the notes here.
Okay. And then it's just the federal designation as the through street or the connector street that prevents the parking? So if it was residential instead of a connector, parking could possibly be allowed? Is that under the width of the street?
Yeah,
I know you're saying you don't, but...
Use the term could possibly because it's narrow even for parking.
But I mean, if it's the same width as it was before when parking was allowed on one side, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
Okay.
And the Public Works Committee will be exploring all of the rules and regulations. That's a good question of what the rules are for a residential street and whether or not you could have parking.
Well, I mean, if it's the same width that it was when it was allowed.
Yeah, the federal rules change too, so I want to make sure that we have the most recent rules and we all understand exactly what they are. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Yes, one more time, sir, please.
Hold back again, 7-11 Derby. Being the one resident that was there before and after, like these ladies here were also, I have never seen any increased traffic after the fact than it was back in 03. There's no increase in traffic, so I still believe it's just a designation for federal funding, period.
Thank you. Anybody else before we take up the rules? All right, we'll take up the rules. Trustee Guest, did you have a motion?
Well, I do. I mean, I've heard your comments, and I think you have valid concerns. I've been down Derby. It's more residential than anything else. And I can't imagine what it would be like not to be able to have parking in the street for guests and for parties. And have parking on my street, I understand how important it is. But I think what we have to do is get it to Public Works initially to study whether or not we can do anything. And maybe what the gentleman in the back said is true. Maybe there is some kind of a 5-year window because that's what you were told back in 2003. So I think Public Works should study it first to, one, see if we can do anything because of the designation as a collector street. We may not be able to do anything. So I think Public Works needs to study it for that reason. And assuming we have some flexibility and options with Derby, then I think Public Works or the board should then cross refer it out to traffic and safety, to the fire chief, our directed enforcement officer to see what concerns they might have. But I think
Public Works needs to figure out whether we have options at all. So I guess my preliminary motion is to refer to Public Works for study and report back to the board.
You only have to write down the last part of what he said. That was the motion.
Yeah, I got all my talking in ahead of time for the motion.
Trustee Kopisch?
I'm just looking at alternative routes there with Greenio Street. Is there parking allowed on Greenio?
Before you answer that, is there a second to the motion? Trustee Dart seconds? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Trustee.
Okay. Craig, can you address that? Do you recall? Is that the all-way jurisdiction, or is that shared with Green Bay? Greenio Street?
Green Bay.
Which street are you talking about?
Greenio.
Oh, I don't know what's on that.
That's Green Bay.
I think that's Green Bay.
It's all Green Bay because of that short strip, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Trustee Zeller?
For the benefit of the residents, the Public Works meeting is next Thursday morning. It's May 16th, at 7 a.m. If we can pull the information together for that meeting.
We won't be able to. We just won't be able to. Because in order to address it, we're going to have to work with the DOT. And we just won't be able to get a response that quick. I'm sure we won't.
Craig, do we have a date selected for the June meeting for Public Works? Do we know what that date is?
The only meeting we have scheduled right now is next Thursday for a regular meeting.
The June 13th would be the date that we typically meet.
Craig, I would assume that would give us enough time to pull together at least some of the foundational information we need to look at the issue.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I would recommend that you talk about it at this upcoming meeting, though, to sort of determine exactly what has to be done and who has to be contacted and who's going to do it.
No, I think that's a valid point. You know, we at least set the stage, and then between then and June 13th, you know, get what information we need to do and further about it.
So, for the benefit of our visitors, you can expect this next. What's the date for this?
It's May 16th.
May 16th at 7 a.m. They'll be discussing sort of a game plan for going forward to collect the information that they'll need to make a recommendation to the board. On the June meeting for the Public Works, which is the 13th, was that right, Tracy?
Yes.
At 7 a.m. at the Village Hall both times. They'll be trying to put together that information and actually come up with a recommendation. So if you can make one or both of those, you're definitely welcome. They're open to the public. Anything further? Motion on the floor is to refer to Public Works. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 5, action regarding the adoption of Ordinance 2013-04, amending Section 5.03, parking of watercraft, utility trailers, etc. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast?
I'll move to adopt the current version of the proposed ordinance with one addition in paragraph C1 sub E. We need to insert an enclosed trailer into that section as well.
C1.
So maybe right before the and, is that right?
Correct. Right before and or item. Enclosed trailer needs to be inserted there as well.
Does everyone have that? C1E. It would read ability to store any seasonal use trailer, utility trailer, enclosed trailer, and or item on camping equipment. Is that correct, Trustee Gass?
That's correct.
Trustee Gass, I'm going to hold off on your motion until. Are there any other comments, either major or minor, editorial comments for the document that we'd like to suggest before we take a motion? Trustee Green.
I just had a comment about definitions. I asked several people to actually take a look at this. Got some interesting comments back because we've been looking at it for so long, I wanted a set of fresh eyes for readability. And one of their comments was side yard. What is a side yard? We define driveway in here. But we've got the front yard, we've got the backyard, and then the definition of a side yard, because there was some confusion regarding that. So it may just be a definition we want to throw in for clarity. Although I believe it's already defined
in
zoning.
Here, but it's defined somewhere. I remember this came up during the course of this conversation that we...
Or for ease of reading, put side yard, refer to zoning, so people at least know where to go to find the information instead of it being hard for them to find.
Right. Anything further with regard to this before we entertain a motion? Trustee Guest, would you like to include both of those recommendations in your motion? And then I'll ask Trustee Green for a second.
Yeah, I would renew the original motion to add enclosed trailer to C1E and further direct staff to insert a definition of side yard by reference to the appropriate portion of the zoning or other ordinance where it's otherwise defined.
Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? Please say no. We've been talking about this for a long time. We thought it was gone and now it's back. So.
Like forever.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank
That's
you.
That's the fastest we ever talked
Congratulations.
Yes.
And I moved to adjourn now.
Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it. Item 6, action regarding animal control services. Is there a motion with regard to this item? The recommendation from the staff is that we handle the animal control services as listed in the memo attached to the, or included in the packet. Trustee Guest.
I'll move to proceed with an agreement between the village and Ms. Hogg and Mr. Erickson with the scope of services to be defined as set forth in the April 29th memo with the board.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart?
Second.
Discussion? I had a question of whether we wanted a sunset clause on this or whether we wanted to define the terms of this agreement. I mean, on the one to protect both parties. On the one hand, we don't want to decide if Green Bay all of a sudden decides they have room for us after all and want us to use their services, although I'm not sure we want to get into that hornet's nest anytime soon. We want to protect them and not have them do all this preliminary work and then back out after a few weeks. And on the flip side, we don't want to promise them 5 years of work when we're not sure what's going to happen. So do we want to define a sunset or an end of the pilot period or something?
No, they are employees, so at any time we could just decide to go a different route. So, you know, just either keep employing them or do something different. But we can certainly, if you want to give them some kind of guarantee, we could certainly do something like that. But I really hadn't planned on doing that just because it's not a contractual agreement we necessarily have with them. It's more of an employee-employer relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So their position could be eliminated, and that would be that.
Right.
Yeah, except for the unemployment implications there and...
I don't think there's not going to be enough income that's going to make any difference. There's not.
Historically, there haven't been that much.
Right.
Right. But we don't have any limits here, because that was one of my other questions, was these two people are awesome. I mean, Mr. Erickson, he has done a great job in this village catching animals for people. So, but there's no defined scope here as far as budgetary implications.
Right, it's kind of hard to do that, just like we did with our contract with Green Bay. We budgeted, I think it was $2,000 or $1,800 a year, and obviously if they get 40 dogs or cats in a year, that may blow that budget away, or if we get 20, so
we'll handle it the same
way. You kind of guesstimate on it and do it to the best that you can and look at past history, and that's how it's budgeted over the years.
Yeah, and the cats and kittens going to the Bellevue Clinical Kennel has worked so well for other people. And then they also have an increased rate of people actually finding their animals that way. So
yes, and it's a lot cheaper for us. It's $155 to take it to Bay Area, and it's $40 a week, or $40 for that time period through the Bellevue facility. And Bay Area does not have a problem with us using that instead of bringing the kittens and the cats to their facility.
So it will be a cost savings for us as well.
So actually we could catch a lot more animals for the same price.
You're right, yes.
Refer to turkeys.
Yeah, I prefer to turkeys.
Yeah.
Anything further, Trustee Zeller?
I have one question. It's item number, it's item letter D, and I don't really understand how this is part of our agreement as far as an employee relationship goes, that they also will focus on rescue of birds of prey, eagles, hawks, etc. I mean, this, I view this as a domestic animal service, and how far are we going to take this in terms of the wild animals, and they will pick up the wild animals only if the animal is sick, injured, or trapped in some manner. And then we've got this extra sentence, they also will focus on rescue of birds of prey. Where did that come from?
The birds of prey, the reason they put that in there is because she was saying, Tiffany, let's say someone calls and there's an eagle or a hawk that's caught in their backyard in some fashion, got tangled in some line or in a tree in some way. What she said, the way she explained it to me, is because of the nature of that animal, there's a lot of love and care for it, and if people try to go off and try to free it, they can get hurt because of the talons that they have. And she said it's better for them to come in and try to free that animal and do it properly and get that animal out. Otherwise, someone will try to do it and someone may get hurt or have some issues with it or hurt the animal unwittingly. So that's the only reason she put that in there. She said it's not like it's a common thing, but you do get calls, and it's the press for that sometimes there's this, you know, beautiful eagle hanging there and the village isn't doing anything about it. And why isn't someone coming to free that animal? So she said sometimes that's part of it too. People see that, and why aren't they taking care of this? So I don't see it as something that would happen a lot, but she did say, you know, they've had incidents in other communities where they've had things like that, and they have gone in and taken care of that and you know, taken care of the animal. So it doesn't become, you know, a PR problem for the community either.
Trustee Zeller, would it make you feel better if that last sentence were just stricken from the document?
Right,
it's sort of included in wild animals. And
I would agree, and we have another agenda item on our meeting tonight regarding the reduction of wild turkeys in the village, and are we going to be dispatching these folks to control the wild turkeys, and, you know, on an hourly basis, and how far are we taking this? So I would strike the birds of prey line, please.
You know what, let's collect some comments on this, and then I'll look to you to make a motion that includes the comments you see fit, Trustee Zeller. Trustee Gant.
No, I haven't got any problem whether we leave that in there or if we strike it, because I think what's important is what Tracy alluded to before, which is this is an employment relationship. You know, so we as the employer can dictate, you know, the responsibilities. If we want them to do something more in one area and less in another area, I mean, they're subject to our employer discretion. And this, it'd be different if it was an independent contractor arrangement where we'd have to actually spell out their specific duties. I think the board just wanted some guidance from staff in terms of what's going to be the delineation of responsibility between, you know, our code enforcement officer, our direct enforcement officer, and what these people will probably be doing. But I think we have absolute discretion to assign them the tasks that we want to assign them, you know, when we want to assign them to them. Because they're going to be our employee, you know, just like any other staff person here. I mean, they're responsible to the governance of the village administrator or ultimately to the board. If we want them to do something here or not do something there, then the board can issue directive, and they as employees will abide by that. So I'm not overly concerned that we have to have everything in writing because they are employees of the village.
I understand that, but this is almost like a pseudo job description, and I agree. I'm not sure why that last sentence is really even necessary for this job description. It's eagles and hawks would be included in wild animals, and on those occasions when there's any wild animal that's trapped and needs to be rescued, we call on them if we thought the animal was, you know, a harm to residents or residents to the animal. So
it's probably just there because people have a lot of sympathy with that animal. Birds of prey, so.
I don't know, I kind of like puppies myself.
included.
All right.
Anything further before we entertain an amendment to the motion? Trustee Green?
This one isn't related to that, well, slightly, but it just made me think of the whole unemployment insurance piece, because I remember a while back, a crossing guard filed for unemployment for over the summer. Yeah, so I just remember something odd about a very part-time employee and somehow how the unemployment insurance works. So I'm not sure, Tracy, if you can check on that just for HR knowledge for all of us, but yeah.
We've already checked with the other municipalities who use them, right?
And yeah.
They all seem to have them as employees, right?
Right, they do. Yeah.
And very happy. Right. So that's not the issue.
Right. But just sort of for peace of mind after we...
That's worth checking, yeah.
Anything further? Trustee Zeller, would you like to offer an amendment to the motion?
Well, in my Trustee Gass comments, I'm comfortable with leaving that in the second sentence of letter D with the approval of the rest of the employment agreement, I guess you'd call it.
So I'll make an amendment to strike the second sentence of D. I think it's unnecessary and it's cleaner this to strike it and just not even address that issue. Is there a second? Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment carries. For the discussion on the main motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Got that? Thank you. Item 16. Item 16 and 13. I'll pick 16 first. Chief.
Thank you very much. There should be two items you should find before you that I dropped off at your places there. One of them is the annual report, the 2012 annual report for the Green Bay Metro Fire Department. Although that includes December 2nd to 31st of 2012 only for our merger agreement, I still thought it was a nice reference document for you to see from here on forward how you will be receiving information on an annual report basis from us. It also gives you, I think, a little nice background information about the different divisions, the projects they're working on, and those items. So that's just for a reference point. For you. The other document there is the first quarter report. Since this will only be the second time we're looking at the layout of this report, I'd just like to highlight a couple of areas if I could. Again, the color-coded areas that talks about response times, that again was defined under the merger agreement, and each of those colors coordinates to each. And we're well in compliance and exceeding our requirements for response criteria there. Related to that, in the large box underneath, we are required to report out to you any ALS level, so advanced life support level, ambulance call that was responded to with red lights and sirens that specifically exceeded the 8-minute response time. And so those two are listed there. To give you a little bit of background, the one on Glenhaven Lane, it does say that the ambulance from Station 8 here was already transporting a different patient from a different call, and that the engine responded from a call it was at, so it was out of the station. So they had a bit of a delay for the engine getting there, and that's why there was the 9-minute response time. The second call, which is listed as West Briar Lane, was the ambulance and the engine responding out of Station 8, so out of the station there on Dauphin Street, and still had the 9-minute response time. And again, I think there's a few things there. Certainly, it is certainly placed a bit south in the village. I do know that we have some issues with the MDTs that with the new CAD, with the CAD system and the process we're working, there can be a 30 to 45 second issue one way or the other for time frame, but that was also on scene in 9 minutes.
I'm sorry, Chief, I didn't understand the MDT.
We have the mobile data computers in each of the rigs, and the way they say that they're on scene is by a touch screen. The MDCs that's in the apparatus that are from the merger have a touch pad on them, so we've noticed a little bit of a delay with the actual time stamp for some of the apparatus with our response times. But again, it's really only a 30-second maybe delay, so it still is something that we would have exceeded the 8 minutes regardless. So.
And the clock starts at the time of the call is dispatched, right?
The time that they receive it at the station. It's the actual response time.
Okay.
Because we really cannot impact the window greatly at the dispatch center. So the merger agreement was designed.
Yeah, I guess they're using the wrong word, but by the time the station gets the call to
yes.
go, that's
yes.
when the clock starts.
Yes. The notification time is the phrase.
Okay. Thank you.
And then the routine functions that are listed there, there were a number of inspections conducted, again, very much related to the liquor licensure issue, so that's why those are listed. Violations noted, I did show you there that all violations were corrected, but that there were four of them. Training hours, again, I calculated by taking the average across the department and then multiplying it by the number of employees in that station. So that is for the quarterly time frame, training hours, and then activity hours total for those 3 months. The report from EMS medical billing is strictly taken directly from what is provided. I believe that Tracy also gets a detailed report from EMS medical billing regarding. I can give you and make sure that you get a more detailed report, but I try to pull out the key things that I thought you would really care about, which was what was the gross amount that was charged in that time frame, what are the net charges, and that's based on deductions with agreements and other things, then the net revenues that came in, specifically actual cash in that time frame, and then I will continue to update that last line, which is the EMS revenues year to date. The asterisk there notes the fact that based on the merger agreement, it's a 50% split, and the minus the commission fee is the fee that is charged by the billing company to both the village and the city, and it's based on only your portion that you get paid, charged that commission fee, not the total income, so obviously only this amount billed out by you. And then there were just two other things I would like to mention, if I could have a moment. One is that I notified Tracy today that the ambulance that was purchased by the village has had to be sent back to the vendor. It will be out of your station for about a week or 2 weeks. We are certainly moved right away in another frontline ambulance that will respond equally well, but we want you to be advised that that had to go back. It had to go back because there was a problem with what is described to me as porpoising of the front end and a very fluid ride in the back so that they felt it was unstable. Mm. We've tried multiple things here on site, both by repairs locally and repairs by our shop. Because it's still under warranty, I'm working with the vendor. They want to install the shocks that they feel will correct this problem. Therefore, they're taking it back to Minnesota and doing that repair work. But I always want you to be aware, in case you would hear anything from any of the citizens, that's why they're not seeing their village ambulance here in the village. The only other thing I want to report on briefly was we did have the one structure fire on Derby Lane that was a response time frame within the January to the first quarter here report. Just for your information, that did actually go to a working still level, which is the next alarm level up from a standard fire. So in actuality, we actually had 6 engines, 2 ladders, 3 chief officers, and 3 ambulances respond to that fire. My understanding, speaking from the battalion chief who was in charge of the fire, was that he felt since they did not know exactly the level of involvement and the spread through the structure, that he moved it up to a working still, which gets us the additional engines, ladders, ambulances, and chief officers. It turned out that a short time later they were able to turn it around and get everything under control, but that's something we appreciate in our chief officers, taking that initiative to understand that we want to be prepared for the worst-case scenario and calling in the resources before they actually are too late for needing them. So I thought that was just something interesting you might want to know from the perspective of our fire response, since it's our first working structure fire under the merger. And that is actually all I have, unless there's any questions.
In my opinion, some evidence that we made the right decision. We're getting a backup ambulance when our new one has some problems with it, and we had more fire engines on the street than we had cars parked on the street, right? By definition. But I think we're serving the residents of Alloway well with this merger and getting outstanding service. I'm really pleased to see the percentages in terms of response times and then in terms of the incidents in which we don't make it within the window. It's only a minute out. I mean, we never want to be over, but it's not like we're taking 12 minutes to get to anyone. And so I'm really pleased with all that. Thank you for your report. Anyone else would like to comment or any other questions? I'm sure you can read over the report if you have questions for the chief in the between now and the next meeting. I'm sure she'd be happy to answer those for you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, item 13, action regarding Plan Commission minutes from the 25th of March, approval of Plan Commission position description. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Dart?
Can we hear from Trevor first?
Sure. Unless there are objections, Trevor?
Thank you. So basically, the intent of this document was just to provide a clear set of commitments for community members that would potentially be interested in joining the committee, just so they're aware of what they're being involved with. Another goal was to provide a clear path or direction for the Plan Commission to follow without much overlap between other committees. And then, those were the two main purposes for this document. I'm currently working on one for the Economic Development Committee as well.
We'll have people knocking down the doors to join these committees, right? Together with our marketing and advertising intern, and then we all set. Thanks, Trevor. Anything else that you'd like to know? Trustee Dart? Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Genrich?
Move to accept.
Trustee Dart?
Second.
Discussion?
I just think it's a great idea. The Plan Commission has evolved from the Zoning and Planning Committee, which used to kind of function as a crisis intervention kind of mode that kind of had to react more than act. And so I think it's excellent to put this all on a piece of paper and kind of see exactly the direction we're going in. We're fortunate to have some great individuals on that committee at the present time that have done a lot of work and spent a lot of time on this. So I think it's a good development.
Trustee Dart?
And I would say that the Plan Commission has reviewed this a couple times now, and they've made some changes, and they're pretty thorough in what they do. So I thank Trevor for working on this, and I think it's helpful. It can be a document that changes and is modified, but it's a very good place to start.
So another piece of work that Trevor was involved in. Some really great work. And he's not only making a name for himself, he's making a name for his university as well. I couldn't be happier with the work that Trevor's done, so we thank him for his time and effort. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 7.
Was that 13AMB?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Backside. Item 13B, presentation of the 2012 annual report. Tracy, what were you looking for compared to the annual report?
Just to have, okay, if you just have Trevor go through that real quick with you and just touch on a few things, and then he has to get out of here because he has to do some more dates. So.
Whoops. And then you just want a motion to place on file, right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so from my understanding, this was the second report the Plan Commission has done. And it's just highlighting the major accomplishments that the Plan Commission has done over the year, as well as highlighting tasks they want to focus.
Is it on? Is your microphone on, Trevor?
Hello. Good. Okay. All right. So the main purpose of the document, I guess it was, like I said, it was the second annual report of the Plan Commission, and it was just highlighting the major accomplishments of the Plan Commission for 2012, as well as highlighting areas that the Plan Commission wants to focus on for 2013. Some of the major accomplishments that the Plan Commission did undertake during 2012, just to point out a few, was the Safe Routes to School Plan. Also, we're looking into the traditional neighborhood development further with Brown County Planning Department. And then also, the Plan Commission did have on their list to hire a planning and zoning intern, which they obviously did. And then also the TIP program is under the accomplishments. Then just one of the future tasks that the Plan Commission is focusing on for 2013. Is working on the comprehensive plan, which is finally approving that, which, as you guys know, the state mandates a 10-year revision, and it was first created in 2004, so it's quickly approaching.
Did we do a five-year, did they record a five-year review of it, or?
No,
we did something, I thought, a five-year mark.
The review of this started in 2008, I believe, the village board started looking at this, and it never was really completed. And it just keeps rolling. All this information was there, but it was never finished. So we're still finishing up what was started in 2008.
There's a formalized procedure that you have to follow, and some of that wasn't done.
Yeah.
Okay. As I know, we had listening sessions and
right.
sorts of things to get public
done,
input.
And it was never
implemented.
It was never implemented or
okay.
put into the plan.
Okay. So. Trustee Dart?
One other thing on this report. Trevor has mentioned working on the comprehensive plan, but I do think that the Plan Commission also wants to really start looking at zoning to make sure that they complement the comprehensive plan and aren't prohibiting us from doing what we want accomplished in the comprehensive plan. Right now, some of them are at odds with each other.
Yes.
It's always a problem with any sort of recodification or changing that you can't just change one thing because it's always connected to something else. It's a long process. Anything further? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to accept and place on file. commendation to Trevor, of course, and the entire group of the Plan Commission. Trustee Kopisch?
Yep, move to approve and place on file.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now, item 7. Action regarding the Plan Commission meeting from April 22nd. 7A, the site plan approval for 2021 Riverside Drive. You want to hear about this, discuss this before they have to entertain a motion?
I will, if you would like, I will have the developers are here, Eric and Rich. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the other gentleman's name. So if you like, they can do their presentation first. They did their presentation at Plan Commission. Plan Commission have some changes. They've implemented all the changes that have come from Plan Commission. We've had some things after the fact that have come up in regard to some access and some with the Riverside Drive and some of the redevelopment of the road that has been added kind of after the fact. But the developer has been really willing and has worked with the Plan Commission, has worked with staff very well on this project, and I think we're going to have a nice project when it's all done. So if you gentlemen would like to start, that would be great.
Thanks, Tracy. My name is Rich Otrovic. I'm with Roddick Development and Construction, and we're working with HME, Home Medical Equipment, that is going to be the new resident tenant at this location. To give you a quick overview, the current property that we have when we came in on the April 22nd Plan Commission meeting, we had originally had just some interior rework that we were planning on doing for a remodel in order to house the process that was going to be involved for HME. They're made up of a showroom for medical equipment. They have a van displayed there for handicap accessibility and things that they use for selling those type of facilities. And then as well as their staff, warehousing equipment, things like that. They're currently going to be moving into the complete building size is 35,000 square feet. They're going to be taking up 25,000 square feet of it. And in order to accomplish this, one of the things that we worked on with Tracy and Craig and the rest of the staff was currently there are some situations that involve some of the stormwater and stormwater runoff that is coming down from the site. We've incorporated the changes that were necessary in order to try to capture it with catch basins that are getting added in here, some detention areas, some curbing, and then reworking the asphalt. When we were here at the April 22nd meeting, there were a couple of people that were involved that had some concern with this driveway access that's down here, and we've agreed that and think that it was necessary for that to be closed off. We've pushed it down and we'll rework this area.
Great, thanks.
It's a little easier.
Yeah, there you go.
And then we also added some additional green space, and then we agreed to another plan. There are currently about five.
Sorry, sir, I'm a little disoriented.
Okay.
Can you show me where Riverside is?
Riverside is here.
Okay.
And sorry, this one, Riverside, is over here.
Okay.
And then this would be St. Joseph's.
Got it.
This plan changes a little bit, but if I went the same way, Riverside would be on this side. There's currently five parking lot light poles here that were used more for car display at that time, which would no longer be necessary. So we're going to eliminate two of those, I believe. Is it two we're taking out?
Oh,
the orange or the black?
The highlighted is coming out.
Okay, so we'll be eliminating two of those, which will help with some of their concerns, too, as far as the vision situation that currently exists as cars pull off of St. Joseph onto Riverside Drive. So it'll clean that up a little bit as well. And then in dealing, we're working with staff in an effort to try to deal with the future reconstruction of Riverside. We've also set the parking lot back somewhat in order to make the acceptable distance setback for the future sidewalk or parking lot. Some additional things that were added, I think, were listed in your memo, and we've addressed those, I think, to the best of our ability or to an acceptable level as far as staff was concerned. And then we presented it to site plan, and they seem to be happy with it, I think, you know, for the most part. So that's kind of where we are. We have some exterior landscaping plans, some things that we're doing to dress up the outside of the building. New roof is going to be going on, a new covering roof to correct that or improve the current condition of that. A lot of the HVAC units that are out there now will be removed, replaced with some smaller units, so that'll clean up some of the visual effect of it as well. So.
Back to one of the things.
Yeah, this is the landscape plan that we came up with too to help. So you can see that a lot of the area with the overhead doors will get filled in. They'll be created and turned into ephes or masonry. The landscape will then also fill that in, so you'll get more green space out of what you currently have.
Well, currently, just a question for you. Currently, there's very little. How are you capturing stormwater? Is that going to be a rain garden to catch all? How are you capturing your stormwater?
Now, the stormwater will... This one shows it better here. Again, too many questions. This stormwater will be coming down. Currently, there isn't anything back there. There's a catch basin back in this area, and right now, a lot of this is at St. Joseph slopes down.
Right.
There are no curbs out here, so to speak, of. So the water comes across the parking lot and dumps over out onto Riverside. I mean, so a lot comes off of St. Joseph's as well. So the condition isn't going to be entirely improved, but it's going to be helped quite a bit by what we're able to do on site. We'll be adding curb along here, which will stop it, and then inlets at these points that will tie into the storm system. And then we've also created some detention area right here, which will slow it down too. So based on the calculations that Jared from Robert Lee worked with Craig, we think, again, we've helped to contain a lot of what wasn't happening before.
Okay, good. And then just another question. In the plan, I'm glad to hear you mention the landscape plan. I only saw three trees on the whole site. Any consideration given to street trees? Because there's not a lot there to begin with either, but the village has been a Tree City USA and...
Yeah, I was here last time when they got the award.
Exactly. So it just struck me that, you know, that's one of the
We
won't
want to chew you up on that. We'll,
yeah, there was massive amounts of asphalt.
Yeah, I think that, and I know that one doesn't show it as we go down, but currently there are some trees along that side.
And you're keeping those?
Yeah, those will stay. You can, can't necessarily take credit for the ones on the south elevation because I think those are probably on the other
cemetery,
people's
property. Yeah.
So I don't know for sure by looking at this, but I thought we may be able to see some along. Yeah, there really aren't any trees here, so I mean I would be willing to put some trees in if that would help and be something that's...
Well, just a consideration, because it seems like an odd parcel within the village. You know, I live up here and I'm down St. Joe's quite a bit, and it just sits kind of odd through there when you've got...
Transition from...
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that would be something that we could easily do. So if along St. Joseph is more where you're talking, is that...
Right, well, because it's your only green space, really. I mean, you've inherited a big... I mean, unless you were pulling asphalt up, but nobody's, at least on my understanding, asking you to do that. But
well,
just where there's...
We are going to need to do that. I mean, we're having to, in order to create what's necessary here, our initially what we were going to do was...
We're getting lopsided.
Yeah, that's okay. Initially what we were going to do was just kind of grind the surface and repave it because it was in need of that. But then as we came in and started working with the staff, we had found out more that there were additional issues there with the storm. So the timing of us taking that up versus putting in the catch basins, doing some of the curbing and things like that that we needed to do has now involved us with having to basically redo some of these grades and direct the water differently than what it currently is.
Oh, I didn't realize you were redoing that side completely.
Yeah, from this side
forward
is basically going to end up
brand
being all new asphalt.
Okay.
So it'll be, you know, with the, some of the exterior painting and the landscaping, it'll look relatively new. So this piece, we have some... maintenance items and issues that we have to take care of along through this back area, but then through these two sections here are really the only two green space areas that we're not touching. So if it was a matter of putting some trees in there, we certainly could do it.
Okay. Just a consideration. Brad's got a great program putting in street trees within the village, too. So,
okay.
You know, just know that's out there.
Was there ever a discussion? I know they were talking about this when Bellin bought the property next door with the huge parking lot, of putting some sort of, I don't know if it's necessarily green space, but like parking lot planters in the parking
yes.
lot. And I don't want to take parking space away from them, but
property next door where
right
this,
here
this big one right here
because
oh,
this
okay.
one was huge amounts of asphalt too that they inherited
still
is
and what was the idea they were
see now
well,
we don't
they were going to take out parking spots there and actually put in some actual
big planters
with the green stuff in it so rather than just this expansive parking lot and I know you don't have an infinite number of spots in this parking lot but I know that it really resonated with the board when Bellin was going to buy this mm-hmm. because they said that they were going to basically take this huge parking lot and at least break it up with something green.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we kind of looked at too, and we looked originally at the landscape plan, and again, it doesn't really show it very well. It must be on the second. To potentially create some green space areas. This one shows kind of a little bit of a planting that goes along here. And if it pops in right at this section, it wouldn't necessarily be too impossible for us to incorporate maybe a couple of those little bedded areas along the building, which would help. And if it was we don't have a lot of extra parking, but we could possibly break it up a little bit with like an island or something that would take away.
We talked a little bit as I recall, about like a sidewalk, not along the street, but like as toward the entry.
Crosswalk.
Is that, did that go any further? Because that would be...
There actually is one there existing.
Oh, okay.
There's, I don't know if we show exactly where it is, but we went out and looked at it, and there's, and you can kind of see right here in this picture. That's actually
pretty
crossed.
Oh, there he is.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, from between having something designated for pedestrian traffic.
Because there is going to be an entry here, am I correct?
Yeah, it's going to move. Well, the entry would kind of stay here as existing.
Okay.
And then we would readjust this one, I think, is the one that moves out a little bit if I have my bearings close. But
it's a good thing you're moving that one from so close on Riverside, because as somebody who goes through that intersection very often, that one's a problem, so I'm glad
that
you're moving that away.
Yeah, and it worked out fine. We discussed it with HME, and they're obviously currently a member of the community and are happy to be back here, and so they were very willing to do it as well.
They're really familiar with St. Joe's already.
Yeah.
We did indicate a marked crosswalk for the accessible parking stalls in the park, too.
Okay, yeah, so we would show that on there.
Any further questions from the board?
Just the signage, you've just got a 5x8 on the Riverside and the St. Joe's side, looks like.
Yeah, there's, I don't know if I have that package. Do you have the signage package?
Yeah, I've got it loose here.
Okay, currently there was not a monument sign located out there, so that would be something that we would propose to... this building.
Right back here.
Yeah, the third one in.
I don't see a monument sign for this, but
just building sign.
But yeah, we would have. Do we have anything that shows that, or just the location as far as what's on here?
What are you talking about, the monument sign?
Were you talking monument? You were.
You've got the two surface mounts.
Yeah. Right.
But then the monument would be also somewhere.
Yeah, I thought we had showed.
If you look at the very last page, E1, it shows a base of an existing sign. But there's just a base there now. There's no sign there. And I don't know how that would be impacted, that site, with the new landscape. And I think that might sit in where the new green space is.
where that base is. If you, I don't know if you guys have looked at that.
Yeah, I think it will land in that new
green space. So I think so. It's going to be
previous
gone.
Monument sidewalk will be.
Yes. Yeah.
So we might have to.
You might have to shift there. Yes. Yeah. One thing that changed a little bit since Plan Commission is if you look on page 5 of the Robert E. Lee plans in the back, it shows the sidewalk being put in, basically where the driveway comes in, that new driveway, and then it heads to the west towards Riverside and then just kind of dead ends there. That was one of the things we talked to them about, putting a sidewalk in that area in anticipation that in the future we would hopefully continue that then to the east. One of the things I was wondering, you guys, and I just noticed this the other day, so I didn't talk to you, but if we could just put a little stub out and put a curb cut into that parking lot so people coming down that sidewalk, because Riverside won't be redeveloped for several years and then you just kind of have a dead-end sidewalk sitting there. That way anybody going down can cut into the parking lot, and then even taking out that first parking space on the corner and then just doing some striping across to the facility so people can come and access the facility that way as well.
Okay, so you're just looking for us to do a return of that somehow to
yes.
get to the parking lot? Yeah, that'd
yes.
be fine.
And then that corner planting bed, in discussions with both Brad and Craig, we would like to have that taken out, and I know we've discussed that a little bit with you guys, just because of the vision triangle and, you know, trying to keep plants that are a little growth in there. We just would rather not have that there. They did, the developer said they would put in that small planting bed that you see, it's kind of hard to see on this design, but it's between where you see the curved sidewalk up against the building on the northwest corner, and then there's a small planting bed they put in there. So, obviously, it's not as big as the other one, but it would be a little bit more green space that we would put in. Also, in the corner by Riverside, you have a detention pond. Is that correct, you guys, or is it a retention pond? So, you really can't plant any further back off of that corner because of the pond being there as well. So, those are the only other things that kind of came after the fact. Like I said, the developer has also agreed the back end of the property, so the east end that is not being developed right now, they will be putting an overlay or a seal coat on that to make that look better as well, because if you've been down there to drive around the property, mm-hmm. that even that east parking lot needs a little bit of work just to, you know, spice it up a little bit. So they have agreed to do that and dress that up.
That's just on the piece behind the building, right?
Right.
Okay, not
yes.
there's an upper part.
Not the upper, no. Okay. Not going all the way up. Just the piece really adjacent to the building, because HME will really be coming through there and using that area as well. So they have agreed to that. Trying to think if there's anything else new. Penny, is there anything else that?
I think
they've addressed everything. The access was a concern. They've one with one access versus two within that property on St. Joseph. In the future, when we go ahead and develop the east end, then we'll look at those two accesses again and maybe cut to one again off of St. Joseph for that eastern part of the development, if that seems to work out. As far as street trees, maybe Brad can weigh in on that a little bit on St. Joseph. That's a good idea. We're kind of waiting on that a little bit until the future development, maybe putting them in all together and looking at that whole frontage area there. But, you know, we could maybe address it now. And, Brad, I don't know if you have any comments on that, because that just kind of came up.
We do 2 plantings a year, so we get staff involved where the homeowner or business can purchase the tree, and then we end up planting on it right away under a select few or a select number of trees that would be suitable for this site. So I'm happy to work with you guys on that.
All right. Yeah, we'd be certainly willing to do it if you'd like to do it now. So. Okay.
I've lost track of all the suggestions that we've had, so in order to entertain a motion, I think we're going to need some help from you, Tracy, especially the things that came up between the revised plan and tonight.
that you just mentioned?
What you see tonight, what you have in front of you, this plan set, addresses all the things that came up at Plan Commission.
Right.
They have done everything that Plan Commission has asked them to. So if you would approve these plans with that, you're getting everything from Plan Commission. The only two things that came up kind of sense are if we put that from the new sidewalk, if we put that little spur in to get to the parking lot and have a curb cut in the parking lot so people can get in that way. And then that planting bed that's in the corner of Riverside be removed. It's still shown on the plans, but that one should be removed.
Okay. And then Trustee Green's suggestion for a
street trees, please.
Some street trees to be planted. Trustee Zeller?
So, just so I understand this, I'm a bit confused with regards to the last five items from the Public Works Director. Those appeared to come in after Plan Commission approved. Plan Commission approval. Are those addressed in what we have before us tonight?
Yes, those are all addressed. Okay, I think we got those all. Because those we had given to the developer. It came up. It was kind of discussed at Plan Commission, and then as we started checking, especially the Riverside Drive part of it, there were some setbacks that were called for early on, and then Craig did some further checking, so that's the whole number one, kind of addressing and clarifying the Riverside. As they were starting to get their plans together, they had called to clarify exactly what that was. Number two was a sidewalk on St. Joseph. That, as you can see, has been added. That piece has been added in. The driveway, reconstruction of the driveways was a question that came up again at Plan Commission, whether they would have to put them all in concrete or if we would allow some to stay in asphalt. What we said to the developer, the one in the new development area, so the western part would have to be in concrete. The two further ones can stay asphalt at this point unless they're going to do some major reconstruction on them, then they would have to go to concrete. So that one is in there and that is in the plans already. And then four does address, again, those two easterly driveways that I just mentioned. And everything else is in there, Paul. It just kind of came between Plan Commission and them redoing their plans from Plan Commission.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that Craig's items were included. And I have no problem with the development. I think it's wonderful. Is phase two progressing right away, or is phase one appears to be
phase one is the only thing at this time that's happening. We don't have any options for anything in the phase two for the other part of the portion of the building as of yet. There are different discussions going on, some of which are with HME and some with other people that have some interest in it, but we have nothing to.
So the phase two portion of the site plan, there would be some improvements to the surface
phase two. Yeah, that's what Tracy was referring to as far as when we go to this now. One of the things that was talked about was this portion of the parking lot is in bad shape. It's broken up pretty extensively. So what we were going to do is we were just going to do some resurfacing. I think when we get into it a little bit, we're going to find that resurfacing isn't going to be enough to do this. So we'll probably have to actually do some grinding and milling and put some new asphalt actually in this. And then there's a section in front of the what we would call the phase two section of the building back here that would then happen a little bit further down the road. We've incorporated some of the idea with the phase one so that when we redo this, it'll blend right into it and that we're just doing it in a little bit of pieces from a cost standpoint.
Okay. So that's the section that you had mentioned, seal coating?
I believe staff was referring more to this area.
Okay.
And but again, like I said, we'll do that at a minimum as per staff's requirement. Mm-hmm. We may find that we need to do more with it, though, just for the current condition isn't great.
Okay.
So.
What's the plan for the upper parking lot? Because that one's even worse.
Right now, nothing. That's just going to kind of sit vacant as currently not needed by the current tenant. So, you know, one of the things at this point, it would be, you know, some potential future development or something else that we might do there. But right now, we have no...
No plans.
No plans to do anything with it.
Trustee Kovach?
Was there anything relative to TIP?
They have not. They had a proposal we haven't discussed. They're aware that there is TIP there and there is availability, but they have not had the chance maybe yet to pursue that.
Yeah, we were just trying to get through this, and I know that it just came online and Tracy had talked a little bit about it. And we were familiar with it.
Just looking at phase two.
Yeah.
This looks great.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
When would they, given all the approvals, when would they hope to be in the project completed?
If we go through and get the approval from you folks tonight, then what we would do is that we have an appointment with the state for, I believe it is May 22nd, give or take a couple of days. And then from there, what we would do is then come in, bring the approved plan in for the redesign of the interior, and then get to pull the building permit. We've done some demolition on the inside of the building now, and until we've gone through this process, we've just halted anything beyond that. So we would probably this week start demoing some of the interior things that we need to do, possibly start removing some of the rooftop units and cleaning up some of that stuff. So with all that being said, if we start, then the idea would be to have them in by approximately sometime in September, maybe October 1st. So it'd be right away.
Yeah.
So
they didn't accidentally leave any Buicks behind, did they?
I got a lot of Buick parts.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a Buick body shop, I'll talk to
you. Okay. I'll entertain a motion unless there are other questions or comments. Again, remembering the three most recent updates. Trustee Green?
I would move to approve with all the updates discussed that came since then that Administrator Fluke has brought forth, and also addition of street trees.
So it's basically the spur for the sidewalk.
Yep, sidewalk.
The
planting
in the corner of Riverside.
Yep, the site
and
triangle.
This street trees.
Street trees.
And the curb cut.
Yeah, that's the spur. Yeah. Trustee Kovach, do you second?
I will second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Hey, thanks very much, and staff did a very nice job on this, and appreciate it. So, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are so glad you're redoing the building.
Yes.
Yes.
And getting tons.
Yeah, they're pretty excited about it, so I think you're going to be a nice thing.
Excellent. Thank you.
And thank you. You're quite easy to work with.
Oh, well.
7B, the site plan review informational packet. Is there a motion with regard to this item, or do we want to entertain comments first?
How about comments first?
Okay. I had a ton of sort of editorial comments. None of them changed the
substance
of the document. They're just sort of grammatical things and consistency that I think will make it more readable, but I don't want to go through them all tonight. I don't want to.
You can just pass my.
I don't want to edit by.
Yeah.
Committee.
By committee.
Yeah.
So I plan on submitting these to the village administrator, and she can include them if she sees fit.
Basically, I'm going to be Trevor. He was going to do this, but he had something with school come up, so I'm just going to go through this. What we wanted to do was make it easier, and Plan Commission had suggested we put together a packet of information for anyone going through site plan review, which is what these gentlemen just did, that would give them information. The first part of the document that Steve just referred to is kind of just, this is what it is. It explains it to them, what the process is, what they would need to do. The second part is a checklist for completion. Felt this was easier for a developer to look at, then he can just look at it and say, okay, this is what I need, and kind of go through the whole motion, and it's a lot easier for him to understand what needs to be put together for the site plan review. The other thing that Plan Commission wanted was submittal dates, and the last sheet lists all the submittal dates through this 2013, and then they would understand when they need to get the information to staff, when it goes to the Plan Commission, or when it would go on to Village Board. So it's just a way for developers to get the information they need without having to always contact me or the public works director to get that information. Something we'll have out on the website, and hopefully it'll be a lot easier and a lot clearer for people as they go through the process. So that's the whole reasoning behind it, just to get the information out in hopefully a clearer format and easier for them to understand.
Trustee Green?
We had one hole in the ordinance before where we had a building that had been approved by the village in a PDD. When it went to the state, nobody noticed it was actually being built, that there was an extra story onto it. That's been sewn up here, right? I just want to make sure. Because it was something in the wording that was ambiguous. So I just want to make sure that we're very specific. We know how many floors, we know how many feet, we know. It was interesting.
Yes, I mean, our building inspector would look at more of that and make sure all of that was current. But yes, this will help as well, making sure that we get the whole document and see exactly what they're doing.
Okay, and then when it comes back from state,
mm-hmm.
it's reviewed by the inspector again to make sure it's the exact same plan that went?
Yes, once the inspector gets state approved plans, he goes through them again to make sure everything is correct and what it should be, and then would work with the developer on that end.
It's another one of those crazy circumstances that you wouldn't think you need to specify that, but obviously you do.
You can't legislate every possible scenario.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know.
But you think floor is a building?
Yeah, that might be one of them.
Pertinent.
I did have a couple of questions or comments that are more substantial than editorial. The appeals process, we sort of ended at appeal saying you can appeal, but... It doesn't say who you appeal to and whether there has to be a rationale for it, or if we just say, I challenge and that's it, or... and if there's any time limitation that you have to submit an appeal by, and I think those are probably good... probably good information to give to people. And I won't want someone to just appeal because they don't like what you said. I mean, there should at least be a rationale that someone would evaluate as to whether it needs to go back through a complete appeal process, whatever that might be.
And I know I'll check the ordinance because the appeals verbiage is in the ordinance itself, so I'll look at that and see if it spells it out a little bit more, and maybe we can put more detail in this if you'd like us to.
Or even just refer, like we do with the other, just refer people to that
section.
Other section.
Yeah. You know, it says right at the beginning that it's Village Ordinance 11.29. So that's where they get all the specific information. We didn't want to get this too long because I know you'll read it, and then they might as well just look at the ordinance. We want to just say, this is the main processes, and this is the, you know, structure. And maybe appeal doesn't even need to be in there at all. But I guess it is a step in it if there is an appeal, so.
Yeah, I would put it in here to at least have the right to request an appeal. Okay, if you don't want to put the whole process in here, then refer them out somewhere else. That would be my suggestion. Is there any, can we promise any time that the developer would hear from the village board, aside from a timely manner?
That's what the dates are in there.
Yeah, I mean,
you can get the timeline.
That's more the submittal and the village board response date. I'll have to check the ordinance, but I think the ordinance just says in a timely manner. I don't think it spells out within a certain amount of time. And I don't know if you want to tie yourself to a certain amount of time. I mean, we try to work them through, staff really works with them and keeps them moving through the process.
But okay. I'm not sure I understand in number one, preliminary consultation. The very first sentence, the developer must meet with the administrator, the building inspector, and or other qualified Village of Alloway staff. I don't really know. I'm not sure I know exactly what that means.
No, I'm qualified.
Yeah, who is deemed qualified? And I don't really know.
And maybe it's kind of hitting other staff, fire chief. Maybe in the meeting, the Parks and Recreation Director, maybe in the meeting, Building Inspector is listed on there. So it's some of the other ones that we pull in to look at the plan as well, and maybe that's just not worded well.
Yeah, so maybe the developer is required to meet with the administrator and the building inspector. That's a no. That's non-negotiable, is that right?
Right.
And other people might be pulled in.
Right, and the public works director typically is pulled in as well.
Okay. I would rephrase it to read it that way, because the way I read it is you can meet with the administrator or the building inspector, or you could meet with other qualified folks, and then there's a message to who's, yeah.
Okay.
Or in parentheses, and possibly other village staff maybe. I don't want them to think that they can get around the administrator and the building inspector and talk to someone who is deemed as being qualified. That's all I had with regard to suggested changes that were about the actual content. So I will make a motion to accept the informational packet for site plan review as submitted, with the changes to the preliminary consultation that the administrator come up with wording that suggests that the developer has to meet with the administrator and the building inspector, and others may be called in for consultation, and that more detail be added to the appeal section as to either the process of appeal or referring the reader out to another part of the ordinance. And that I will submit some purely editorial comments for the administrative reviews at her discretion. Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion?
That's been a long time. It's a Randy motion.
You deserve that. You deserve that, Randy. I'll give you it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And again, thanks to Trevor for his work on this. 7C, very similar document, but now for the PDD informational packet. I'll take comments on this document as well before we entertain a motion. Trustee Green?
My comment could be editorial, but this is the one that gets me. Preliminary approval, detailed construction and engineering plans not needed. My only comment to that is number of floors and buildings, to me, aren't details. So I don't know if they need more direction there than, I guess me reading this, I'm not sure what not detailed means. How much information do you want? And again, I'm just cognizant of loopholes where we've been burned before.
Right. For preliminary, we don't require that because the preliminary approval, things may change by the time it gets to final approval. So if you would take maybe the development across the street when we did that one and think how that went through the process.
Yep.
And a lot of these things, we did not change the ordinance. This is coming directly out of our ordinance.
Right, but they brought us plans.
Pardon?
They brought us plans across the street.
They might have in the preliminary, or in the final maybe.
No, they even did in preliminary. Okay. Most people are fairly forthcoming in preliminary. That's why they just... not detailed. What do we mean by that?
Yeah, I don't know. Craig, with detail, is that more, you know, if a preliminary, you could have a design plan and everything, but maybe not to the, I'm not explaining it well, detail that you would get when you get into a final design that would spell everything out?
Well, I think a lot of developers don't want to spend the money
right.
for the detailed construction and engineering until they know they at least got preliminary approval.
Right.
And some guidance.
Okay, so all we're talking about here then is a concept, period. We're not talking size, we're not talking anything.
If you look, maybe a better way to explain it, look at the preliminary approval, that sheet, that's
yeah.
the checklist type sheet. In there it kind of says this is what things that you need for preliminary approval. So an accurate map of the project, a general development plan showing, you know, these things, you know, all the things listed. Architectural drawings and sketches. So there is quite a bit of information that's still needed in the preliminary because you can't even make, you have to have enough to make a decision whether you want to allow them to continue on with that project or not. So you are getting quite a bit. But then when you get to the final, if you looked at the final, then you get into more, you're talking about topographical survey, you're talking about adjacent streets, you're talking about grading. I mean, it's much more detailed for the final, so you could, you know, there, you said, okay, we really like this plan and concept. We approve of, you know, the preliminary design. Now they go and they get all the engineering done. Right. And that's how our ordinance is now stated. So if there's anything we want to switch with this, with these, we need to redo our ordinance. Because these documents are based really on our current ordinance and how it is set up and the verbiage in our current ordinance.
No, where this fell through the cracks last time was after our final, it went to state. State approved an entirely different plan than this board did for levels of building. So, okay, that wouldn't be in preliminary. I just, it seems like not detailed requires just seems ambiguous, at least in the way I read it.
Well, I think that.
But
be
I like the check sheet better.
Finalized HVAC, plumbing, fire safety, all those details. Whereas over here, here's the site plan, 50 bed, whatever, whatever. So you get a concept. More detail than that, obviously, but not final. Because as Trustee Gass said, there's a huge cost associated with those.
Yeah, I get that. I just don't want history to repeat itself.
Tracy, what's number 5 mean under final approval? Any amendments submitted? Submitted when? After the preliminary approval or after the...
That would be after final approval.
After the hearing and the final approval, if there are any amendments after that, then...
Like, for instance, we have an example of that coming through back to us, actually, but it's through the site plan review process. Resurrection Church had gone through the process with their redevelopment through the site plan review. They made some changes on their rooftop units. On their facility, so now they will have to come back through plan commission and through village board. But again, that was a site plan review, but similar type process.
And I think it probably is understood because it comes after the, it's number 5 and it comes after number 4 where they have the public hearing, but if you could add in there, I think for clarity, any amendments after final approval.
Okay.
Or after the public hearing or something, that would be very explicit as to when additional fees would kick in. Trustee Zeller, please.
I just have a big picture question here. The PDD process used to be a 4-step process where the plan, the preliminary plan would go to the what we would now call the plan commission, then to the village board, back to the plan commission, and then the village board. Now, this, when we changed that process, it was plan commission and then village board. And we changed that process, I believe, last year.
What we changed at that time, it used to be plan commission preliminary review, village board preliminary review. Then it went to plan commission for final, and they held a public hearing. Then I went to village board, and you guys held a public hearing. So what we did was we took out that first public hearing from plan commission.
Okay.
So it would streamline the system a little bit. And when Dennis Duffy and I had talked about that, it was like it seemed a lot to have two public hearings because you have all the extra notification. I mean, we still notify them and let everybody know when it's going through that process. We notify the residents anyway, but we just took out one formal public hearing.
Okay, I misunderstood that. So it's still a 4-step?
Yes, it is.
2+2 meeting?
And maybe even a 5-step if, let's say, village board doesn't put the public hearing on the day of your final approval. You could have a 5-step. You could say, okay, we're putting a public hearing out such and such a date rather than doing your final approval on the same day as the public hearing.
I see. Then in the document, item number 7, under the preliminary approval, the second page, so there is a preliminary approval granted by the village board.
Yeah.
Then a final approval by plan commission and a final approval by the village board. Now I understand.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And then the village board is the only one that holds that formal public hearing for the final approval.
And the developer is required to pay one $500 process fee for the entire process, the application fee for the entire process, plus the building permits, of course, but the process requires one fee. Okay.
Anything further? Is there a motion with regard to this item? I will move that we accept the document as submitted with some editorial comments to be given to the administrator to be used at her discretion. Is there a second? Trustee Green.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, item 9. Action regarding the approval of a noise variance permit for a charity fundraiser for Desert Vets on June 8th at Green, 516 Green. Trustee Kopisch.
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Guest.
I'll second.
Discussion?
I stopped and talked to the landlord just to see where exactly it was. I assumed it was in the Zesty's parking lot. It is. He said last year's event went very well. He has no opposition at all to it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 11, action regarding the board appointments and committees. When you thought you got out of it, Debbie reminded me that after the April election, we reappoint people, residents who volunteer for committees to those committees, fill new spots, but we have to also do the same for the board, so you have in your packet a listing of recommended assignments to committees. Most of you are very familiar with these committees. Mr. Gendrich, you still have a little bit of a grace period before we get you as well.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to that we approve the committee assignments as submitted in the packet. Is there a second?
There aren't any submitted. These are who are on there now.
Right.
I'll leave as is.
I'll leave as is, yeah.
Okay.
Trustee Guest?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 12, from the Public Works meeting on April 18th. The first item to purchase two garbage collection vehicles with the option to purchase a third if the 2014 budget allows. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to approve the purchase.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart, seconds? Discussion?
Under discussion, I just want to say that Craig and others in the department did an exhaustive research on this, and I think they did a fine job. They presented it to us in a very understandable chart, and they evaluated the objective items and subjective items with all these vehicle choices, and I think they did a great job in this process. If we make a mistake in this purchase, it's not because the research, the homework was not done properly. So thank you to Craig for that.
Craig, can you remind us what the life of the existing trucks, the expected life of those trucks, and where we're at right now, the ones that are going to be replaced?
Originally, they were budgeted in our equipment replacement plan in 8 years. That's what they were budgeted for. And 3-4 years ago, when we went through the equipment plan, we did an update, we looked at the cost, the purchase cost, replacement cost. We went through the whole fleet, and we adjusted the service life of equipment. And you probably recall at budget time, we've talked about a little bit how we moved things back year by year. We moved these to 10 years, but we found we're not going to get to 10 years service life on our current trucks. We've got way too much maintenance on them. We're at 9 full years right now. So that's why we moved one truck up to this year, because of the service life, and at the point where we have one in the shop every week for repairs. So we're at that point where our repairs are taking a lot of service time away from being on the road. If we weren't running with this alternate week collection and having a spare truck, we'd have a problem.
Okay.
So now these new ones, we're figuring we're probably going to push 12 years because of the type of truck that we're getting. So we're looking for a longer life on the new trucks than what we got on the current ones.
So we've already pushed the expected life of the truck by at least a year in its time.
Yeah.
Are we increasing the life by the every other week pickup?
The every other week is recycling, so right. we're running. That's working very well, and it has saved us quite a bit of money.
But does that increase the life of the truck? It's being used less? Or these aren't the recycling truck at all?
Well, what's going to happen, and the reason we proposed the three is, having gone through this whole process, knowing that we need to buy the third truck, we're trying to extend it so we get three of the same truck. But our fourth truck is much newer, and that truck's going to stay. And that'll stay as a backup for 12, 13, 14 years. Really, because it only runs a little less than half time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what happens. We run, in a typical week, we run about, like right now, we'll run about 2.5 trucks. On a recycling week, we'll push 3 or 3.25. So all the trucks do get run, but 2 of them are running less hours.
So the change to the every other helped in terms of gas consumption and those sorts of things, but it also helped in terms of the life of the vehicle.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And I don't remember the number off the top of my head what the savings was, but it really is, when you look back at it, it's substantial. And we can see it in the budget. We've actually saved the money that we forecasted on our operations. So I think it's over $50,000 a year we've saved on our collection cost. It might be more than that. I just don't remember what the final number was. But we can show that we've got the savings.
Thank you. Have you, sort of as an aside, have you heard from residents? I know we went to that transition, and people had to get used to the fact that they were going to be stockpiling recyclables for a while. Have you heard a lot from folks as to how easy or difficult that transition has been?
Not a real lot, but what we do run into... we haven't sold as many large carts as we thought we would. People are, for the most part, getting by with a 65-gallon cart for recycling. We do run into people that call in and have a lot of recycling, and they can't get it out because of the size of their cart, whether it's a 65 or 95-gallon. We do run into that, I would say, probably 3 or 4 times a month. And so there's two ways we address that. One is we tell them, give us a time when you're going to be there, and we'll have somebody stop by and pick up the extra volume. The other one is sometimes we go and take a couple of our used carts in here, and we loan them to the people for a couple of weeks so that they've got more volume, and then we pick them back up. That's how we handle those few instances where they just can't handle it. It doesn't pay to sell somebody a cart when they have a one-time deal.
Right.
You know.
So these are mainly one-time situations where they might be moving or...
Right.
Doing some sort of cleaning. Right. It's not that you have a elderly couple that can't get their recycling bin out to the curb because it's too full.
Otherwise, it's really worked pretty well.
All right.
It has.
Thank you, Craig. We have a motion in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 12B, proposed change order to add Hastings Street reconstruction to the current project. Change order is in the amount of $325,000. Craig, do you want to provide a little background before we...
Yeah, let me comment on this before you make a motion. when we originally looked at this, we discussed it with our technical resource that we use for McMahon on some of these kinds of questions, and we also addressed it with the village attorney, Dennis Duffy. And the initial thought was it would be okay to go ahead and do this additional work as a change order. When we discussed it at Public Works, we actually made the motion to go ahead and handle it as a change order, but Trustee Zeller said, let's check on with Dennis again to make sure that we are okay with this type of approach. On the final review, Dennis's recommendation to us was, because of the dollar magnitude, let's just handle it as a separate project rather than handle it as a change order. And so what we're proposing to do is just go ahead and bid the street Hastings as a separate contract. He just wasn't comfortable with the total dollar number that we're talking here. Now, we've done change orders up in this range before in my previous practice, and McMahon has done it and so forth, but this being a separate street and not a street that we're currently working on right now was part of the reason why he said you're just better off to just advertise for bids and bid it. One of my concerns was our cost might be higher, and that could be the case, but what's happened in the last couple of weeks is that the contractor that is doing this work for us right now on the other streets did get a couple of other bids, but he'll be finishing these projects early this summer. So chances are we're going to still be in the same cost range because at least one or two contractors are going to be looking for late summer and fall work. So I guess that's a kind of a change in approach, but it's probably the best approach to take at this point in time. And what we would be doing is late in May, we would be advertising and opening bids later in June. And that would come back to the board then for approval.
Trustee Gass?
I'll move to adopt the recommendation of the Public Works Committee with the change that rather than doing it by way of change order, we do it by way of a separate contract award for the Hastings Street reconstruction and go out to bid.
Is there a second? Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? Trustee Zeller?
I'd just like to change one spelling or one text here. In number four, Zeller stated he is reluctant in lieu of his.
Thank you.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I think we're to the moment we've all been waiting for. I'm surprised the media isn't still here.
Once in my life, I was happy the board meeting went on.
Is that why he was here?
You won. I'm going to come up here if you don't mind.
With the baby.
Item 14, action regarding resident request to reduce the number of wild turkeys in the village. Would you like to hear from Brad first?
Yes, please.
Okay. We have a problem, Brad. Shoot across the river to LU and Green Bay.
Well, I don't know. That might, Brad, that might be the unfortunate result.
Exactly. When the resident first contacted both Steve and I sent out a general email to some of the other communities around here asking if anyone else is dealing with the same issue. Obviously, they're dealing with the same issue, but they have not had any requests to do anything about it. So, Green Bay is the only one as close to dealing with an issue, and that's their deer program that they set up about 3-4 years ago now, where they allow some hunting for deer. Anyway, I did contact Dick Nicolai from the DNR, and I also sat down with Ben Nelson. Did I say that right? Hope so. Yes, Ben Nelson from Wildlife Sanctuary, who is a wildlife specialist, and talked about if the village were to do something about the turkey issues, that we have in our community. What are some of the steps that we may want to consider, or what is it that the DNR would require? You know, just kind of throwing everything out there so that I could gather as much information as possible. Number one, I don't want to be our turkey expert.
So, resume.
But anyway, so that's what these talking points are on here tonight. The first and foremost is, you know, the public perception. If you do something, what is the public perception? We've only had one email from a resident, but there have been calls from others asking about what can we do about the turkeys. So, you know, we don't have any record as far as how many people actually have contacted the village on the issue, but, you know, based on the one email that we did receive, started to work from that point forward. The public perception is a huge issue. You really want to quantify your actions. How are you going to quantify those actions? Is it based on the number of calls, petitions, accidents, injuries, you know, property damage? Because
those last three, have we had any accidents? Have we had any injuries? Right. Have we had any property damage?
Lawn damage, yes. But what the turkeys will do is they will land on top of roofs and eat the shingles.
Of course.
They were doing that downtown. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why the and hawks were on the other list and not the turkeys.
Exactly. And by the way, I have I sent this to Troy Erickson, and he read through it and he thought I had everything covered on here very well.
And there's also a quality of life issue that's not really quantifiable in those terms.
Correct.
There are people who, you know, they won't send their kids out in their backyard because the turkeys can get aggressive.
Correct. Well, what the problem is, talking with Mr. Nelson out at the wildlife sanctuary, is, you know, you've got the reintroduction of the turkey years ago, but then you have the domestic turkeys that have been transforming themselves with the wild turkeys, so they are not as fearful of a human or a dog or whatever else as what you might expect them to be.
So the geese dog can't chase the turkeys?
Well, then you're talking private property, and you know you get a little bit of a different issue. And then again, that kind of goes back to that public perception. If say we decided to have a hunting season. The DNR is speaking with Mr. Nikolai, is how many permits do you want? Because there is not a set number that you can look at and say 10's okay to have in your community, 10,000's okay to have in your community. It's what you decide is a comfortable level.
But then too, we can only allow that in the parks, correct?
If you were
correct,
hunting,
or can we allow people to hunt? Well, and what I'm getting at is we have a rather substantial flock that I know of that's living in a bunch of private lots. So how do you? Because I know when you and I talk, there are so many issues with this. It's like,
yes,
as you start thinking about one little thing, it gets bigger and bigger. But, yeah, so how do we handle the ones that aren't necessarily residing on parkland, but...
And those are in my mind, those are the bigger issue. In the parkland, they're kind of an annoyance. And but if someone's on my property, I can't use my own backyard with someone.
A turkey. Exactly.
A flock is in my...
Well, and the flocks
are... property,
and
I can't even use my backyard because of the turkey? That's crazy.
Well, and it's not insubstantial either. I've seen 10 on one domestic lot.
Absolutely.
In places in the village. So, I mean, we've got...
Can turkeys be relocated, or do they just come back?
Well, that was one of the points of discussion that I had with both of the individuals, and actually even with Troy. Relocating them is really not the issue, the proper way of going about it, because you're just spreading the problem somewhere else.
Well, some people could use more turkeys than others.
Well, and I like that, you know, Brad, you'd already talked to even Paul's Pantry, you know, about if we doing something with the turkeys.
Yes.
If you went to, you know, I talk about a couple of the methods that are used, the rocket netting and cannon netting.
You got to tell me what that is.
That's exactly what it is.
Oh, your boys would love it.
You know, you're setting up this a string of either some sort of a rocket or a cannon, and the net, you know, they're explosives, obviously, and the net is attached to those. So then what they try to do is, you know, you look at a flock of turkeys that are in someone's backyard, and then you have an individual there that fires this, and it nets them.
What's the difference between a cannon and a rocket netting?
The cannon aspect is supposed to be less expensive, but it still is, you need to have someone very knowledgeable and trained on how to do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the rocket aspect has the potential of being a missile flying out. What if it comes detached?
Right.
Where the cannon aspect is, it's much shorter distance.
Right. So it's just a big net, Brad?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody goes out and gets several of them?
Correct.
Brad, where do we have this problem in the village?
Well, there are at least 30 or so down in this corner over here.
Okay.
And then Webster Heights has several. Wheezy Park area, Green Isle.
There's someone hanging out in Kelb.
Gelb, correct. I get them.
I've seen them on yes.
Delahut and Longview.
We have them up on Ducharme.
Delahut and Longview.
Iroquois. I think they kind of hang out up here at Gelb Corner.
I'm two off of Webster. In
really?
Yeah.
Like 10, 12 of them.
Yeah.
Group, you know?
Right.
The grant opportunities, what are they for? What do you get a grant for?
You could do, well, you could do a research, you could have a, to the best of my knowledge, you could use it for bringing in these cannons or rocket aspect. You could do a, kind of like a research, anyone in you know, in that research into things to come in and try different methods of you know, whether it's oiling. The problem with the oiling of the eggs is turkeys are pretty good at hiding their nests.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got individuals searching, and it takes a lot of time. That's where the expense comes in.
So if you oil the turkey's eggs, they don't hatch?
Correct.
That's kind of wicked. I'd rather eat them.
As opposed to...
I don't want to kill the kids.
Oh, boy.
Are we talking about like a... Under 100 birds, right?
Perspective.
In the community?
Five flocks, something like that?
I would say, yeah, we're at a good 100 and growing.
That are living in residential areas.
Sometimes by right, colts, there's 25, 30 of them.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a platoon of turkeys.
And that's the other thing. You know, one of the discussions were to, well, you could do a feeding ban. Well, that's not, we all know that's not going to work.
Right. They're eating shingles. That's probably not going to help.
Yeah.
Rather than eat feed.
So what's your recommendation, Brad? I mean, I think something needs to be done.
We have to make turkeys.
I guess... Both Mr. Nelson and Mr. Nicolai were more than happy to come up. Mr. Nelson, come over. And Mr. Nicolai, come up from the valley and you know, spend a little time doing a little more education on what could be done, cost factors that you know, based on experience.
They come to our next board meeting? And
I don't know.
Or would they talk,
you know,
talk to you or...
Probably during the day would probably be the best for both of them.
So can you have them come up and then pass the information along to us at the next board meeting? Is that possible?
I can try to get it set up before the next board meeting. I think one of the things that we may want to consider is try to see what the general public is interested in. You know, you know, is it a small problem like Ray was saying? Is it a few turkeys or is it a lot? And are a lot of people having issues? So, you know, maybe...
Because we do know people who like the turkeys.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you like the turkeys when they're not in your yard.
No, I know people who have them in their yard who like them in their yard.
Oh, well.
Not me, because they kill my garden, but just keep hearing from residents.
Pull over.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, and get some more information would be my sense, and then, I don't know, maybe we apply for a grant, and if we can get one of these cannon things, and if there is a relatively large flock, you know, 3 to 5 birds or more, in somebody's residential area, and we're, I mean, not just transient, but they kind of camp out, we can go and cannonize them.
But I agree with.
Well, and then they got to figure out whether we relocate them to a forested area, or we have them slaughtered and donate the meat to the shelter or something.
Well, that was another consideration. I like Brad's idea of having a listening session because we only hear, I think, one side of side. So I think we should hear the breadth of it because who knows? More people may come than we even know and know where these flocks live. But then, too, the other consideration as we were talking is if we do use village money to capture these birds, that's everybody's money, and then somehow trying to open it up. If we have people who live within the village who want the turkeys, great, here they are, come get them. And then Paul's Pantry is a backup. Or is Paul's Pantry, are they even interested in taking and processing turkeys?
I don't know that yet.
I could suggest we donate them to the wild game feed at St. Matthew's.
There we go. And it's all of perfect. That. So, you know, we may have more community resources to get rid of the meat, too.
And I understand the whole public sentiment thing. You don't want to go do something and get in the paper of, you know, you're chopping off heads of turkeys. this is a nuisance. I mean, we have residents who are, this is a nuisance to them. They can't use their own property. If this were rats, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But, so we can have a listening session, but in my mind, we have residents who are being negatively affected by this nuisance, and we have a responsibility to take care of it for them.
Correct, but I think we can learn something by a listening session because I think we're only hearing from a few people versus the whole community, whereas if we open it up for a listening session, I think we'll find more.
In my mind,
more.
I don't care if most of the residents say, I like the turkeys because most of them aren't going to have them in their yards. And so some were saying, I like the rats. They're in your yard. I don't care. You know, I like them. I still wouldn't be listening. So
no, but that's kind of not what I'm looking for in the listening session. It's like, where are more of these? Because I live 2 houses off of Webster, and, I mean, I can tell you where there's 10 to 20 camped out and what trees they live in at night. And, yeah, they are a huge nuisance in your yards. I completely agree with that, but I think we're hearing from a couple squeaky wheels, which is great because it brings the problem to light, but I think we've actually got more of a problem than we think we have.
I just don't want us to go into a listening. I'm not going to go into a listening session thinking that I'm going to hear from the public that's going to make decisions about people's private property and whether we should take care of a nuisance. It's just not
right.
And I understand politically it doesn't look good if you're.
I just think we're actually
getting rid of turkeys.
I think we're going to find more.
Most of the wildlife that people like, but.
I guess one of the things that you really need to consider. I mean, obviously, our ordinance. There's no hunting.
Right.
In our community.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we have changed a little bit when you're referring to being able to shoot a bow and arrow on your property as long as it's not leaving your property. Obviously, shotguns in that residential area, even in the park, would most likely be out of the question. So, you know, you're really down to a few options.
How hard are turkeys to trap, did you ask?
Greg? Greg's a turkey hunter, and you, chance would be pretty slim to probably trap a turkey.
Really?
I would think
they're
so.
Smart.
Even the halfway domesticated ones that I can tell you what they eat on my garden?
I think it, I don't know.
I wonder if I can get a big trap try.
Something like that. But I could be wrong, and we might find that out.
Yeah, I wonder if I'm more domesticated ones who have formed a routine. Well, but then this opens up for other animals, too. Like, we've had skunk issues in certain areas of the village, and residents have privately hired trappers to come in and get rid of those, so.
See, you just hit another real
right, problem. I just, that's why this, the,
is it,
yeah.
Is it a village problem, or is it an individual resident problem? You know, similar to the skunks and the raccoons and the possums that people ask to be trapped at their location.
Yeah, because we have had those requests come in before.
Absolutely. Well, and historically when they come in, I mean, is our response typically, if you want to trap them or do something, it's your business. I mean, the village isn't going to do anything about it.
That has been the response to date.
Correct.
Well, then you, how far do you want to go down the path? I mean, you know, I've had both critters, you know, run up in my backyard, and I figured if, you know, they became a nuisance, I'd probably, my thought was always I wasn't going to call the village to take care of it. I'd call somebody else that was, you know, certified and qualified to do what they got to do to get rid of them. Although if you have 10 or 15 turkeys camped out in your yard, that's a different matter. Just because of the farm.
Well, and I didn't realize that they would damage a house. I mean, that's what really got me about the public nuisance piece of it, is that turkeys will actually damage roofs. I mean, that was something that wasn't on my radar.
If I had a turkey eating my roof, cite me for shooting him. Because, you know, I mean, give me a citation for discharging a weapon.
And we don't want people doing is just shooing them off of their property, getting a dog
property
or something.
Right,
property.
To the neighbors.
Just have, you know, pushing the, kicking the can down the road, and they have bigger problems than just turkeys.
But, you know, I don't see any harm in, you know, applying for one of the grants, and maybe we then have a resource, you know, if there is a significant problem that's persistent. I mean, not transient, but, I mean, these 10 turkeys have been in my backyard for the last 10 days, and they ain't moving. Maybe we have a resource through a grant we can maybe do something about it. You know?
Brad, if a turkey's relocated, will they return to home?
They're a creature of habit. They follow a pattern. So if they're going into someone's backyard, they'll keep going there repeatedly until as a flock they decide to go elsewhere. So that's why if you see them in one spot, you'll continually see them in that one spot until they decide to move. So if somebody has a problem in the backyard, one way you can deal with them is they'll come back to that backyard. There are turkey hunters out there that are sharpshooters with a bow, and they hunt them with a bow. And it's very common. It's surprising how common that is. You don't hear about it a lot, but there are a lot of bow hunters for turkeys. So that is one way to shoot a turkey in locally here without discharging a gun.
Yes.
The other one is we do have a trapper we use for the ponds because we have to trap the animals out of there spring and fall. And we have used them to go get raccoons and other animals elsewhere in the village. I mean, we can ask him. He may know about trapping turkeys. There may be a method. It's kind of interesting what you find out about what they do to control animals and pests. They usually come up with ways to do it. So we can ask him, too. He may have a method that works.
But again, I think it goes back to what are you doing with it? And is there, and that's a question I need to find out from the DNR as well, is that a permit requirement then if you're trapping a game animal, because that's what it is, versus your raccoons, or excuse me, your raccoons.
Rats.
It's a small game, so.
You know, I wonder what, like, the trapper, you know, sharpshooter guy Craig was just referring to. I mean, if you're bringing somebody like that in on a case-by-case basis to deal with a problem in a particular area, and he comes out with a bow and he takes four or five turkeys, you wonder if you got to pay the guy.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe taking the four or five turkeys is pay enough for him.
On a little bit different note, I was talking to a gentleman that they were having a major deer problem down in the valley. And it's not Little Chute, because Little Chute has basically the same thing that Green Bay does. They brought in sharpshooters to take care of their problem. But in this community, they brought in these sharpshooters, and the deer were just everywhere until today. Sharpshooters.
Word got out.
And I think it was, I can't remember how many days he said between the time they brought them in until they said, okay, that's enough. They got 3 years.
Wow.
And away they go, and back in come the deer. So, you know, they're and that's going to be the next issue, too, I think, is the number of deer. Because we've had residents come into the village hall ask, can we put slow down or deer crossing signs up on Webster, or not on Webster, but on Libel.
Mm-hmm.
They've been hit on Webster. I mean,
I was going to say, we see them up on Webster quite frequently.
Brad, do turkeys go, do they leave for wintertime?
We do.
No.
No.
I guess
there's so many cities that are laughing at. I mean, they have coyote problems, and they're talking about turkeys.
Well, if we had the coyotes, we wouldn't have the turkeys.
That's right.
That's it. Some coyotes.
Yeah,
and again, I don't want to be the turkey.
I guess, you know, a little direction would be definitely.
I think you've done a great job putting information, questions together, because one question leads to even more. So I'm glad you've got some context to give you some more specific information.
I say talk to those two resources you found. When it comes time to apply for a grant, and we'll evaluate it later. And until such time, you know, the village will take the position it always has, which is, you know, it's your problem. And then if we get more information, particularly if we get a grant, maybe we can do some assistance. And part of the investigatory thing is have Craig check with the guy and see if, you know, he goes out and he kills five turkeys, we've got to pay him a penny. Then we might have to get a state permit or something to allow him to do that. And he can just go in and focus on zones where there's significant problems. And if we don't have to pay him because he gets turkey meat, then everybody wins, except for the turkey.
I wonder, too, we've got some residents that are very good with bows, and I know you had mentioned a nuisance permit, and if there's not some informal way we could even, because we've opened it up to you, you can shoot a bow on your own property, it's just the arrow's got to stay on your own property, and we have some people in the village that are that good, they can do that. If there's some way we can't connect those groups and open it up, if you do have problem turkeys, we can issue nuisance permits. But I don't know what the regulations are regarding the nuisance permits, because that's a way to do it budget neutral and still try to get some people together and get the problem solved.
It's a game animal, though.
Yeah. Right. So I
mean, somebody should be able to shoot a deer then, based on their logic. If there's a deer in their yard.
If they have, well, they have to get a nuisance permit.
They have to get a nuisance permit.
It would be a permit issued from the DNR to the village, and then the village issuing that permit.
Okay. And other communities have done that?
Green Bay does that with the deer issue. But as far as any of the communities around here, the turkeys, nothing yet.
They haven't done it yet. Okay. I just didn't know how that worked.
I think that's why the media is a little interested in it, because it is something that's out there.
Well, there's your deer answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the more dramatic issues are, like, as you probably were in the Horicon area in the past, the depredation from the geese.
Yeah.
But you're talking about thousands, tens of thousands of geese and hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage to crops and livelihood and stuff. This is, I don't know, kind of a wild goose chase.
Well, I don't know if that was a motion, Trustee Jasper. I think I would take a different approach in that I would tell residents we're working on the issue, not that the problem is there, but we're working on the issue and we're trying to figure out what the most efficient way is to remedy this. And then you know, I would entertain a motion, or I'm going to make a motion to postpone this item to the next village board meeting to see if Brett has an update for us. Is there a second to that motion, Trustee Green?
Second.
It's true that in the meantime, residents are kind of left to, if they really want the problem taken care of now, then they're going to have to do it themselves. But I want to be able to tell them that we're working on this. They need to know what the rules are. Okay.
So. But they need to know that's an option, because village residents have hire trappers to catch nuisance wildlife for a long time that I know about. So it's an option.
Well, it's an option. Yeah, it's an option they've always had. Sure. Yeah, I agree with you. And it's something we're looking into to see if the village can be a resource in that process. But until we figure that out, I mean, I'm on my own device.
Does that help? Is that fair?
Fair.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
One more item on the agenda, right? Before you go into closed session?
Consent before we agenda. Get to that, Brett, I want to commend Brad for his work on this.
Oh,
this is, it struck me as I was...
The turkey guy, though.
I know.
Let the record reflect.
As I got the information on this, and then Brad got involved, that he's working on this, he's working on, you know, everything from Emerald Ash Forest to the facilities here to obviously all the parks. So this is just one of a million issues that comes across Brad's desk, and he had to devote quite some time to this. So thanks for the work on it.
Oh, thank you. Can I go back to my other question?
Yeah.
Before you go into
sure
your, you go into your closed session, yeah. Would it be possible that I could spend about 30 seconds with each one of you taking a picture right there?
Yeah, of course.
They want to put it on the website.
I didn't do my hair.
Me neither.
if we can, before, as you, just before you
had yeah, absolutely.
That's okay.
Yeah. Can I email you a picture?
We are in the standard background. Yeah, we don't want the 1978.
The 78
your band aid.
Yeah.
I want the picture of you shooting a turkey that's on your
roof.
Turkey Village designation.
We can take one down and take another one in the next board meeting if you want.
We all have one today.
Oh. Well, then we'll definitely do our next one.
We all had to do ours today.
You wouldn't want to give one slide.
Item 15 is the consent agenda.
Which one?
Agenda. We'll take items 15, A through C, unless there are objections. Is there a motion with regard to?
Move to approve A through C.
Is there a second? Trustee Gingrich? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Was there any discussion on that? Is there a motion to convene in the closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.85 concerning employment, appointment, or performance evaluation, etc.? Is there a motion?
So,
Trustee Dart, is there a second? Trustee Gass, roll please. Trustee Kopisch?
Yes. Yes.
Aye.
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 We're in closed session.